Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, David Madlin, director of the American Worker Project at the Center for American Progress, going to be here talking about, this whole thing going on in Wall Street, and why it's happened. You know, you look at some of the legislation that's coming out of Washington. You're looking at some of the Republican-backed bills. This latest Republican majority appropriation bill, gutting labor protections, stealing job training programs. It's no wonder people are in the street. We're going to talk to David Madlin about that. Also, Stephen Capozzola, the media director for the Alliance for American Manufacturing, going to be here talking about the currency manipulation bill, the oversight bill that passed through the Congress, through the Senate. Hopefully now we'll get it through the House. They have enough sponsors and co-sponsors to get it through the House. Question is, will it get out of committee? Will Boehner and the Republicans allow it to get to the floor for what, you know, remember them? Up or down vote, up or down vote. They've already got enough co-sponsors and sponsors. They're now worried about getting it out because, you know, they don't want to do it. And that's Boehner's call. I'm not happy about that. It'll be interesting if it does get out of the House, what our president does. Also on the program in the second hour, Greg Palast, going to be here, investigative journalist and best-selling author, going to talk about the occupation movement and also his new book, Vulture's Picnic, which will be out in the middle of November. It's always good to talk to Greg Palast. And, of course, in the second hour also, Christy Setzer from U.S. Chamber Watch. She's an advisor there, going to talk about the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the companies that are leaving. You know, when we think about the Chamber of Commerce, we think about, you know, the people who plant flowers in Town Square, you know, our local people. No. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the International Chamber of Commerce, the GOP Hit Squad, a group that I consider an international terrorist group. That's the real U.S. Chamber of Commerce. So we'll be talking about that. Also, your calls later. And we'll get to all that. It finally has happened. If I had the blaring music, if I had the trumpets playing, if the hallelujah music was coming, I would be playing that right now because the Senate Republicans, yes, they have unfurled their very first jobs plan. And look, it only took them 3 years to do it. So, you know, it's on their timetable. Because if you remember the pledge, remember the grand pledge, the 48 pages, 27 pages of pictures, 21 pages of, you know, nice flowery words with no real policy written into it, but, you know, just nice gestures, nice happy words. Jobs, jobs, jobs. That was the pledge, if you remember. So now they've come out. Here's their plan. It is the real American Jobs Act, not the American Jobs Act like the president put out, the real Jobs Act. It's real. It's not something imagined. It's real. And I love what Politico called it. They called the GOP Real Jobs Act a conservative's dream agenda, targeting labor and environmental regulations, enacting a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution, lowering the corporate and individual tax rates, encouraging energy production, and expanding free trade. Texas Senator John Cronin, chairman of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, he's quoted saying, I think it's good for people not only to see why we think stimulus 2.0 wasn't a good idea, but to see a little more detail of what we would do when we were in charge, what we'd do if we were there, if we were holding the power, keys of the kingdom, what we would do. Well, we know what you would do, Senator. We saw it, you know, during the Bush years, if you remember. We saw what you would do, and it's the same stuff that got us into the mess we're trying to dig out of right now. More of the same failed ideology, the same failed policy. But the Senate's Real American Jobs Act, headed by an interesting trio. You've got the free trader, Rob Portman. You've got the Tea Party poster child, Rand Paul. And then there's John McCain, which I'm going, gee, how'd you get into that one? You got two freshmen and, you know, McCain, who's been there forever. So if you remember, we talked about last night and the night before, Republicans filibustered Obama's Jobs Act. You know, he wanted $447 billion, you know, start building roads and bridges and schools and getting people back to work. So I guess we're going to see no infrastructure, school construction, no payroll tax cuts, no aid to states, none of that stuff, thanks to the Republican filibuster. But the plan that the Republicans have put out, the real American Jobs Act, it's not an imaginary one. It's real now. It's on paper. And I guess it's divided in a number of sections. They want to, they want spending reform. They love the word reform. And I've always loved that, reform can be good or bad. We had a lot of reform during the Bush years. And a lot of it was really, really bad. So here again, they want spending reform, tax reform, regulation reform, domestic energy promotion and export promotion. And, you know, they're claiming it borrowed some ideas from both wings of the radical Republican caucus. They got it from the conservative wing and the, oh my God, you're insane wing. So that's kind of how they brought things together. This is the plan. So under the spending reform, they want the balanced budget amendment because, you know, in the future, what they want to make sure is that we can't address our needs, we can't address our problems because we're going to have a hard spending cap. So when the economy collapses like it did in September of 2008 under the Bush administration, we'll be completely unable to react. We'll be neutered, and the country will fall. And what will happen is the wealth class will then be able to take over. So good. You got to understand it. They're okay with this. They also want to give the president the line item veto authority, which, you know, you can argue that back and forth. There are people on both sides of the aisle for and against it. On the idea of tax reform, and I've been telling you this is coming, so here it is. They want to reduce all individual tax rates and all corporate income tax rates. They want to take that down to 25%. So we're going to take it from 35 down to 25. Now understand, we've already got a massive budget shortfall. So by cutting this rate down even more, think of what's going to happen in a couple of years. So by doing this, they claim they're going to close some loopholes and close some things, which, of course, we already know. The next day, we will see return. So good. On the regulatory reform, they want, you know, got to get rid of Obamacare, got to get rid of Dodd-Frank, because, you know, we need to let the financial industry do what it does best. Crash our economy, which is what they've done pretty well at. Also, you got to let the healthcare industry do what it does best, generate profit for shareholders. So good. Those are two excellent proposals. So you got to know what they're talking about. Also, they want to try and limit medical malpractice lawsuits. So again, we're going to look at the Texas plan where if you're injured, you have to pay your lawyer. You have to pay the other person's lawyer if you lose. So it's a loser pay system. So if you don't have the money, no lawyer is going to take you. Not at all. And I love Chuck Grassley's statement on it. He says, of course, the proposal will show how the Republicans would govern in the majority. Of course, this is going to show the American people that what we would do if we were in charge. And I go, didn't we see that during the Bush years? Because it got us into this mess. Do we want to go back to this? And you look at the president's job plan. You know, there were some things in it I didn't like. The free trade agreements. I didn't like the Georgia plan. But it did have infrastructure spending. It did have a lot in it that was good meat. But the Republicans, the other day, they filibustered it. Couldn't get it past the cloture vote. 50-49, one person not voting. And again, you know, the idea was to stick the president in the eye. And they did. So congratulations to the Republicans. Now understand, that jobs bill, that the American Jobs Act, the one the president put forth, 63% of the American public supported that bill. You look at that NBC News, Wall Street Journal poll, 63%. So why did the Republicans filibuster it? Well, because the bill is paid for by a small surtax on millionaires. And oddly enough, the American people think that's a good idea, too. The very same NBC News Wall Street Journal poll, 64% agree it's a good idea to have the people who have the money, you know, the very wealthy, ask them to pay a little bit more. And you look at this, 64% of the respondents agree it's a good idea. Yet, not going to happen. Now, compare that to the Republicans' job plan. More of the same failed ideology, more of the same failed policy, same failed handouts to those who are doing quite well. No, we can't possibly tax the billionaire class. And what do you get? Now, Obama's jobs plan was supposed to be, if you remember, to be passed as a whole. You take the good, the bad, and the ugly. And last night, what we saw the ugly get passed. These three free trade agreements, I'm telling you, flat out ugly. Colombia, Panama, South Korea, all passed by pretty good majorities, especially in the Senate. South Korea passed 83 to 15, and Panama and Colombia 77 to 22. So when you're looking at these free trade agreements who are not going to benefit us, every report I've seen, job losses as far as the eye can see. We're going to lose not only jobs, but also set up another tax haven for these corporations to set up big places to hide their money overseas so that they can then come back in a couple of years and go, we need to repatriate all that money because, you know, we've got $1.5 trillion overseas. We'd like to repatriate that so we can put that money to work. They should be paying taxes on that money. We shouldn't be setting up more of these loopholes. We shouldn't be setting up more of this. It's horrible. And what amazes me is now you see these politicians, you see these pundits wondering why that there are people who are angry, that why there are people out in the streets, why there are folks who are saying, you know what, this economy is not working for us. It's just amazing to me. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to talk with Dr. David Madlin, director of the American Worker Project at the Center for American Progress. He'll be here talking about the Republican-led House Appropriations Bill that, once again, big, big sloppy wet kiss to the wealth class and a real screwing for you and me. Right back with David Madlin. Stick around.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Hundreds of Chicago teachers union members and community allies converged on Bank of America's headquarters Wednesday demanding that the bank renegotiate toxic financial deals with city schools. The Chicago Teachers Union's Matthew Luskin.
There are two very clear things that we would like to have come out of this. We would like to see Bank of America and the other banks with these agreements to agree to renegotiate. For the Board of Education and other elected officials out there to support us in this. They should be out here supporting us, calling on these banks to renegotiate.
The AFL-CIO says that the 99% of the country who want jobs should take careful note of how each U.S. senator voted on President Obama's American Jobs Act. The Labor Federation says the unanimous Republican opposition to the jobs bill reflects shamelessly distorted priorities. The AFL-CIO says it's appalling that the GOP is blocking the American Jobs Act. Chrysler UAW workers are the last workers at the Detroit 3 voting on the tentative deal reached with the union. UAW President Bob King says the Chrysler deal brings 2,100 more U.S. auto jobs. The Detroit 3 deals combined, he says, will add more than 20,000 new direct jobs. It means billions of dollars in U.S. auto industry investments, but compensation increases for most of the auto workers came in the form of bonuses and profit sharing rather than in wage increases. Every year, the Center for Studying Health System Change hosts a conference in Washington, D.C. called Wall Street Comes to Washington. As Jesse Russell reports, this year, it was far from business as usual.
This year, they might as well have called it Occupy Wall Street Comes to Washington, as the conference was disrupted by protesters, saying that Wall Street has no place in healthcare. The panelists at the conference represented Citigroup, Citi Investment Research, Morgan Stanley, and Goldman Sachs. Dr. Margaret Flowers spoke out at the conference.
2 million people in this country a year can't get cancer treatment. They have to choose between cancer treatment and sending their children to college. You should be ashamed. Every single one of you should be ashamed.
Outside of the conference, Adarla Scarlett told the story of her father, who took his own life because he didn't want his health care costs to be a burden on his children.
He says, verbatim, in his note, he says, I'm sure you understand that this was something I had to do. Getting old and ill without money is simply not an option in this country.
She said she traveled to D.C. from Colorado to be a voice for people like her father.
Every person that dies for lack of access to health care is somebody's father or son or daughter, and I'm here today to stand up not only for my father, but for all those like him.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Our quote of the day comes from Robin Blumner in a piece at the Tampa Bay Times. She writes, in its broadest terms, the Occupy Wall Street protests is over the nation's gaping economic inequality. The protesters, while largely leaderless, have for weeks been braving the elements, mass arrests, and pepper spray bearing police to represent the 99% of Americans for whom there are no government bailouts. And, you know, you go down there and you talk to these folks, that's what it's about. It's about jobs. It's about opportunity. It's about their future. And while the mainstream, well, part of the mainstream media is trying to scratch in their head going, nobody knows why they're there. That's why they're there. Anyway, to talk more about this, I've asked Dr. David Madlin, director of the American Worker Project at the Center for American Progress. AmericanProgress.org is the website, to come talk to us a bit. Dr. Madlin, thanks for taking time for me.
Rick, thanks very much for having me.
You know, I look at this whole 99 movement and people are going, well, gee, why are they down there? Pretty simple. Policy has gone against them. The job market is going against them. And they're looking into the future going, I'm not going to have it as good as my parents did.
Yeah, I think you hit it right. Our economy and our democracy aren't working for most people. And that's deeply troubling. You know, if you listen to the people who are out protesting, what their basic argument is, they say, look, I've played by the rules. I've done what I was supposed to do. You know, a lot of these folks are recent college graduates. And they say, you know, look, I took on tremendous debt. I, you know, worked hard to get an education, and now there's no job or no good job for me, and instead I'm stuck with little options because I don't see the government helping create jobs, and I'm stuck. This isn't the way it's supposed to work here.
And you look at this jobs bill. I mean, the Republicans today unfurled their amazing jobs plan. And I got to be honest, anything that Rand Paul is a part of and Rob Portman, I don't know that I can agree with, but they've come out with their jobs plan, only 3 years in the making. But it's the same hash they've been slinging for 30 years.
It's exactly a repeat. In fact, that's sort of among the most galling things about it. It's, well, let's continue cutting taxes for the wealthy, and let's get rid of any sort of regulation that protects workers or environment or anything else. Those are the problems. Even though, as you said, for 30 years, that's exactly what they've been doing, cutting tax rates for the rich, gutting basic protections. So clearly, if that was the solution, it would have worked already. Unfortunately, you know, it's not. Yet they don't have ideas, and they're ideologically and sort of financially tied to just repeating those basic tax cuts and cut regulations.
Yeah, I look at this, and I was looking at the article in Politico today, and they had a quote from John Cornyn, the Republican National Senatorial Committee head there, saying, well, you know, this is going to show us, you know, a little more detail of what we would do when we were in charge. And Grassley came out and said, of course, this proposal is going to show how Republicans would govern in the majority. And I'm going, wait a second, am I the only one that remembers that, you know, through the mass of the Bush years, they controlled everything, and look what mess it got us into.
Exactly. They, you know, clearly they controlled the House, Senate, and the presidency. They passed the basic agenda that they're trying to double down on. But even, and, you know, this is sort of the sad part, even as you know, even when Democrats have had some power where they controlled, you know, a branch of Congress or even the presidency, the basic agenda that they're pushing largely was enacted. They were cut. We cut regulations, you know, banking regulations that helped spiral us into this mess with support of also Democrats, not
Absolutely.
Just Republicans. And so it's you know, it's really, though, troubling now when the Republicans are saying, well, this is the only thing we can do is more of the same failed stuff.
Yeah, you know, and you talk to the people, because we've gone to the occupation in Philly and doing some work with the one that's starting here, and you talk to people and they get that. They get the fact that, you know, when it comes to trade, when it comes to Wall Street, there really is just one party in this country.
Yes, I mean, there clearly are big differences between the parties, but on too many issues, our democracy is just representing, you know, the top 1% and their interests. You know, banking, I think, is very clear, and Wall Street is a big issue. But, you know, Congress just passed the three trade deals, Colombia, Safrian, and Panama. And if you look sort of at the very least, if you look at the polls, and the public is deeply divided, skeptical, you know, knowing that on the one hand, sure, there are some benefits to trade, but very oftentimes it's the workers who get the short end of the shrift. So, sure, so you get some cheaper consumer goods, but you've lost your job.
Yeah, I mean, all the cheap consumer goods are great, but if you're living, you know, hand to mouth on unemployment or that's run out, good luck buying those cheap goods.
Yeah, it's not. It's, you know, that's, as I said, why the public is deeply divided on these kinds of issues, because the idea that that buying a cheap good is a trade-off for a decent job is not a good deal for most people.
Right. But you look at you pointed out in your piece, House Majority Appropriations Bill attacks the other 99%. We've got a link at the ricksmithshow.com. Just click on Dr. David Madeline's name. It'll take you right there. But you point out that, you know, Republicans are going after all the things that they're in their jobs bill. They're going after workers' rights. They're going after, you know, environmental regulations. They're doubling down and they're going full tilt boogie towards, changing, taking us back to the 90s.
Well,
the 1890s.
Yes, the 1890s, exactly. This bill that the House Republicans just put out is really frightening to me. It's the bill that's supposed to fund, you know, the Department of Labor, Health and Human Services, and several other agencies. And it's not bad just because it makes drastic cuts in things like job training and Pell Grants, so people can afford to go to school and get skills they need to get jobs. It's riddled with terrible policy, these policy riders that would gut basic protections. It would gut protections that are designed to ensure everyone has health care. It would gut protections to ensure that workers are paid what they're supposed to be paid and can go seek legal advice on how to ensure they get paid. It would take away workers' rights to, for example, know that they have a right to join a union by their National Labor Relations Board wants to put posters, just like there already are for the minimum wage in your workplace. You know, here's what the minimum wage is. They also want to put, here's what your union rights are. And this bill would take that away. It's literally riddled with so many of these kinds of riders that pretty much anything the administration has tried to do to help workers, students, unemployed, is blocked. And really an outrage.
Well, I mean, if you listen to the Republican debates, they want to undo everything that the Obama administration has done. And from what I'm hearing from you, this appropriations bill is an attempt to do just that.
Exactly. You know, it really sets the stage for potentially another dramatic and deeply sad showdown. The House Republicans have laid down their marker that says drastic cuts that will harm workers and students and the unemployed. And absolutely nothing the administration is trying to do can be done. Clearly, that's not a negotiation. It's just saying my way or the highway.
Yeah, and that's their ideology. But here's what bothers me, and I see the calls in this Republican jobs bill that they, the real American Jobs Act, not just the American Jobs Act, the real one, not the fake one, but the real one that the Republicans have put out, to me is leading us towards what I've been saying is coming. Another tax reform bill of 86, where they go and they lower the tax rates, they close a bunch of loopholes, and people, you know, the working people, they end up getting the short end of the stick, through losing more and more, and then the next day, The lobbyists go back in, add those loopholes, and now you end up, like we did in 86, with a lower tax rate and all those loopholes coming back. And even Greenspan said he was shocked at how fast those loopholes came back.
Well, that's, you know, exactly the problem. We know who has money, influence, and power right now. It's those at the very top, and they can use their power, influence, and money to rig the system ever more, so that they're the ones who benefit from the special, you know, the special interest giveaways. And that's sort of deeply disturbing. You know, a study just came out, I think yesterday from the Congressional Research Service. This is the nonpartisan research arm of the Library of Congress that, you know, echoed the idea behind the Buffett rule, that it showed in about a quarter of millionaires pay less in taxes than do the middle class. And that was sort of, you know, that's, and they do that because they've been able to rig the system so that they have special benefits.
Right. And, you know, that's one of the things that you hear from people. You know, it's, you know, we've rewarded gambling over working. We've rewarded, you know, putting your money into Wall Street, and we've rewarded that, and we've socialized that to a large extent. But we've taken that position over people actually working for a living. And it's borne out by, you know, the Buffett thing. Buffett released his tax returns, and he said, look, paid 17.4% taxes. I know electricians and people working building construction jobs who pay higher than 17.4%.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. Warren Buffett is not just an isolated case where something, you know, sort of screwy happened with his taxes. He is emblematic of a tax system that is geared to reward those at the very top and harm the rest of us. It is really, you know, it's emblematic of our failed economy and failed democracy that we don't have any sense of sort of fairness or an economically productive rationale for the system.
In talking about fairness and taxation, you know, personally, I'm a fan of going back at least to the Clinton years tax code, maybe even the Reagan years a little bit, because we need money into the system. We've got a huge revenue shortfall. It's got to come from somewhere. I don't know that I agree that it should come from people at the bottom, but I'm looking at the Herman Cain plan. A great marketing skill. You got to give the pizza man credit. He knows how to advertise his product. But this 999 thing. Everything I keep seeing at it, this is a loser for people like me, but it's a winner for people like Buffett.
In some ways, you know, we said that the Republican jobs plan was sort of doubling down on what they've already been doing. The Cain, maybe a tripling down or something. It is really an outrageous example of slashing taxes for the rich and increasing pain on the rest of us. That's, you know, exactly what it does. You know, as you said, your fear with the, if there's some broader tax reform that they're going to stick it to us, that's exactly what that policy does.
You know, I look at this and then you try and explain to folks, you know, the 9% sales tax is on top of your state sales tax. You do know that. And then when people go, oh, wait a minute, that's a bad idea. Well, of course it's a bad idea.
Yes. For 100 years almost, the progressive movement had a progressive tax code with a basic concept that those with the means who have benefited the most from our system should pay a little bit more to ensure that our country can fund itself. That basic concept is under attack here. And that's really, to me, very frightening. Instead, it's the opposite. It's that those who don't have means are supposed to pay more for the privilege of supporting those at the very top.
But David, the 47% of the country pays nothing. They get away scot-free. They pay absolutely nothing.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you've had a lot of guests already talking about how bogus those claims are. You know, they look at one narrow slice of the tax code, the federal income tax, and they ignore everything else that people pay, like the payroll tax or sales tax or whatever. You know, those are totally bogus claims.
What? Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh would lie to me?
Or
say it's not so.
You know, Rick, I come on your show because we can talk the truth and get to the bottom of all the mis perceptions out there.
Well, and again, there's another one. Dr. Madeline, always great talking with you. I appreciate the work you guys do over there at the Center for American Progress. Thanks so much. We look forward to talking to you again.
Me too. Look forward to it.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
Five men suddenly found themselves faced with an all-out attack on their territory. Five men confronted by a hostile power. But these five men looked destiny in the eye, and then they suited up and took care of business. This sounds like a heroic action movie, but these guys are hardly heroes. They're the top executives of the giant paper maker, Temple Inland, and the power confronting them was International Paper, an even gianter corporation. International was making a hostile bid to take over Temple Inland, swallow the competitor whole, and spit out the five executives. Sensing this, our heroes did indeed take care of business, their own. And when I said they suited up, it was not in battle gear, but in golden parachutes. Shareholders were recently sent a cryptic message from the corporation urging them to approve, quote, the compensation that may be paid to Temple Inland's named executive officers. Those would be our five self-serving stalwarts who negotiated the takeover deal, including CEO Doyle Simons. How much compensation? Simons is to get $8.8 million in cash, $29 million in stock payments, a $6 million pension, and $16 million in tax reimbursement. Yes, not only is Doyle getting a golden parachute, but the company is also paying the taxes he'll owe on the gold he takes with him. The top five leaders are bailing out of Temple Inland with a total of $162 million to cushion their fall from the corporate pinnacle. Not so fortunate are some 10,000 of the corporation's common workers who were abandoned to the merciless god of mergers, which always requires sacrifices of jobs in these situations. This is Jim Hightower saying, bosses get the gold, workers get the shaft, and International Paper gets market control. Where's Teddy Roosevelt when we need him to bust these merger merchants?
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Well, you know, if Rick Santorum had his way, we would be in a trade war. If you listen to him say the other day, he says, yeah, I want to beat China. I want to go to war with China and make America the most attractive place in the world to do business. Yes, by gutting investment in infrastructure and, you know, cutting taxes down to the point where, you know, corporations don't really pay anything. So they can walk away from their responsibilities. Quite interesting. And then you pair that with Mitt Romney coming out and saying, as president, I will present China with a clear choice. Either abide by your commitments, open your markets and respect our property, or else the days of open access to our markets, our ideas, our companies are over. Tough talk from the Republicans. It'll be interesting to see exactly what President Obama does now that the Senate has passed the currency oversight bill, and in pretty bipartisan fashion. Anyway, here to help talk about this and walk us through some of the finer points, our good friend Stephen Capozzola, media director at the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Stephen, thanks for taking time for me.
Yeah, great to talk to you, Rick.
You know, I look at this and, you know, pretty good bipartisan support. I actually saw Jeff Sessions for a second almost look like he cared about the working people of this country.
Yeah, he was great. He really took Republicans to task. He said, we have to do this and it makes sense.
I'll give them a pat on the back for that.
Absolutely. I mean, when anybody stands up and does the right thing, you give them the credit that they're due.
Yeah.
Although, the next day, the free trade stuff holds a whole other argument. But the argument against this bill and the Chinese who Reuters reported spent big money lobbying our Congress to vote against it, and they're still spending big money lobbying the House, they're saying that this could start a trade war.
Right. Well, ironically, China is right now helping to create jobs in Washington because they're spending a heck of a lot to hire lobbyists to fight this. But anyway, our director, Scott Paul, made a great comment on CNBC earlier this week, and he said, this doesn't start a trade war, it ends a trade war. And in all truth, China started a trade war with us. This is not something we asked for or wanted, but we have to be realistic and say this is what we're embroiled in, and it's time to take action. And for starters, this is a WTO-compliant bill, and it's incredibly modest. And you're right, it passed the Senate in bipartisan fashion, 63-35, 16 Republicans voting for it. Rob Portman from Ohio voted for it, which we can get to as it relates to the House. But this is a very common-sense bill, and it's a heck of a relief to see this happen.
So it's not as some of the folks have been telling us, not protectionism, it's not the Americans are walking away from the nation, we're isolating ourselves. This is just, as I've been saying, I'll agree to being a protectionist. When I leave my house, I lock the door behind me. I don't have a big moat around my house with alligators, but I do lock my door.
Right, well, let's explore the idea of protectionism. In fact, what China does is protectionist. What they're doing is applying technically a massive tax on U.S. exports to China. No one seems to be fazed by that. There's also, they're obviously manipulating their currency, but they're also dumping, subsidizing. They have no respect for intellectual property. There's rampant piracy. They're an incredibly protectionist nation. So what we're basically doing with the currency issue is saying, you're taking steroids, that's illegal. We're going to stop it. We're going to penalize you for that. We're applying the rule. There's nothing about it that's protectionist. And let's take a quick moment and look at the bill in question. All it does is say that, okay, currency manipulation is now an actionable subsidy. So if you're a U.S. manufacturer and you're competing head-to-head with China for product X, and you say, look, we've lost tremendous ground because China's underselling us, they're undercutting us, and it's because of this currency peg. Once this bill goes through, you could now file a case with the U.S. Trade Commission and say, this is an actionable subsidy. I have been hurt. My business has been hurt by this currency manipulation. What does that do? It sets up a preliminary investigation and a preliminary hearing, then hopefully a full investigation and a full hearing and a preliminary ruling, et cetera, et cetera. And somewhere down the line, you hope to get a favorable ruling, which will then be enforced by the administration. So we're talking about a long, lengthy, cumbersome process for any number of U.S. companies to apply for recourse. This doesn't automatically impose tariffs. It merely says, okay, you can file a case along these lines. That seems to me incredibly modest. It's going to take a long time, and the real sad fact is some of the companies that file these cases might be out of business by the time they get an affirmative ruling.
Right. Well, my other question was, and I look at some of the trade cases that the steelworkers have pursued, mm-hmm. and the first question that I always ask is, why are the steelworkers doing this? Why isn't it the companies that, who are harmed by doing it, by these policies, why aren't they doing it? Why isn't the U.S. government doing it? Why is it the steelworkers union who has to be the one to stand up for the workers in this country?
Yeah, it's interesting. Now, my take on it, of course, I'm at the Alliance for American Manufacturing, and one of our stakeholders is the steelworkers. But we're also involved with U.S. Steel, Allegheny Technologies, ArcelorMittal. Those companies, by virtue of their participation in AAM, are involved, and we salute them for that. It's just interesting. The steelworkers have really gotten to the vanguard point of filing trade cases. They know the issue. They see how rapidly they're losing, their members are losing their jobs. They're springing into action. Yes, I would like to see more of that. I should mention, by the way, this bill that we're talking about, the currency manipulation bill, passed the Senate, and now it's in the House. But let's look at the House one second, if we can, Rick, because a majority, more than 51%, a majority of the House of Representatives have signed on as co-sponsors of this bill. And that says one thing, which is that, yes, this bill would sail through the House if it came to a vote.
But will it?
What's holding up? John Boehner has made it clear that, and interestingly, his quote was something like, I don't like what China does about its currency, but I don't think this bill is the way to go about it.
And he, I'm paraphrasing, but I think he said something also like, we shouldn't be meddling in another country's currency. Okay, well, a side note is, we're not meddling in their currency. We're merely saying that if you violate trade rules, we're going to do something about it. But if he has concerns about currency, put some measure forward. So I would say that actually, if he's blocking it for ideological reasons, I don't respect those reasons. And if he's doing it because he's following the will or the call of companies that are funding his campaign, that's reprehensible. So what he should note is, he's from Ohio. They've been clobbered by trade with China, lost tons of manufacturing jobs. And his own Republican senator from Ohio, Rob Portman, voted for the same bill. So we've got to see Boehner get on board. He's standing in the way of the clear majority of the will of the U.S. people on this.
You know, I go home to Cleveland every once in a while because I grew up in Cleveland. And I got to tell you, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
To see the empty auto plants, to see the machine shops that used to feed those auto plants, and all of the warehouses and all the factories and all the jobs that were once there, those hollowed out buildings, those empty parking lots, and you know where those jobs went. They went to China,
right?
Because it's the cheapest labor. And my problem with it,
you know, can I interrupt you, Rick? You know, I realize you're compacting a lot into that, but it's important that we note this. We hear the argument that China can compete with us, can beat us because of low labor costs. I should mention that labor very often is only a tiny part of the input cost of manufacturing. And if you take steel as an example, great example, because we have steel in so many manufactured products, labor is just a minute percentage of the production cost.
Right.
It is this currency peg that gives a much, much bigger advantage to China than any labor issue. So,
and not just the currency peg itself, but also the major, the massive subsidies,
yep, exactly.
and the policies. Look, you know, and the reason I brought up back home is because, you know, you look at the big auto plants,
mm-hmm.
all of the feeder jobs that go into this. So
yep.
when one of those big industries go, all of those feeder industries go with it, because
right.
that same synergistic.
Yes.
Environment you have where your producer is just next door goes with it.
Right.
And that's just as big a problem.
Right.
So let me ask you on this currency thing.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people seem to be in favor of it. Have you done any polling to tell me where the American people are on this?
Yeah, excellent question. And there's some interesting things we find. To make a long story short, the vast majority of U.S. voters strongly support action on China's currency and the various ways in which they cheat to get a trade advantage. And if you look, this is Republican, Democrat, Union, Tea Party, etc., their support for this. But what's really interesting is some of the strongest support for taking action on China is among Republican households and Tea Party voters. And so whatever the amorphous Tea Party is, the person within that would expect their representatives and their senators to be taking action on China, and yet that's not the case. There's an amazing disconnect for what goes on in Washington.
It is amazing, you know, because most of the Tea Party people I know, the first thing, they're very nationalistic,
mm-hmm.
And you know, when I see them with their, you know, their American flag shirts on, I always love to ask them if they know where the shirt was produced.
Right.
And sadly enough, most don't.
Right.
But, you know, here's the thing. Here's what bothers me. You know, when you have this manipulation going on where the Chinese are stealing industry after industry from us,
mm-hmm.
I was looking at some numbers on our exports. And since 1995, the share of manufacturing in our exports has dropped from 57% down to 45% of our exports being manufactured goods.
Right.
So we're sending out, you know, financial services, which is why our trade agreements are written the way they are, but we're not producing the product anymore. So when I hear people say, well, we're exporting stuff, yeah, but we're not building it.
Right, and you know, there's very clever ways that in this debate people will manipulate the data, but an interesting thing is what we do export to China. Oh, China's our fastest growing export market. Well, for starters, our fastest growing export to China is scrap and waste products.
And toilet paper.
Yeah, so basically crumpled up paper, cans, little bits of metal that they will melt down and refashion into products to sell us. So we're not making a profit on that. That's not supporting any jobs. But we also are exporting to them what are called turnarounds. Pieces that will be used toward assembly for the actual value-added product. I don't know how much time we have in this interview. I did want to also mention we should touch on the trade agreements that were passed earlier this
year. Yeah, I'm going to give you a good minute to that, but I wanted to finish
mm-hmm.
that point. The point that you were making that, you know, we do export some of the components that they assemble there and ship back.
Right, right. But in the bigger point is, I think Americans get this. At its simplest, you can see there's not American-made products on the store shelves and where there used to be. People get, on the most basic level, people understand that this supports jobs. And you touched on the synergistic effect of manufacturing earlier. We know that manufacturing supports 4 to 5 other jobs throughout the economy. So when we have this debate with people saying, oh, you benefit from lower-priced goods, what I always say in retort to that is, I had a job during the last recession in California. I lost my job. I had an editorial job. And I was getting by. I was doing pretty well. And then what was I left with? I was working at a bookstore. That was all I could find. I was basically making minimum wage. So I had to work almost an hour just to pay for the train fare to get to work, and almost another hour just to buy a stick of deodorant. So how was I going to benefit from the fact that T-shirts were now cheaper? I had no disposable income, yep. And I didn't have health care from that job. So, no, the American people are not benefiting by sliding down the wage scale and losing their good-paying manufacturing jobs. And it doesn't help the ripple effect going outward from there.
Or the whole stagnation of wages as a whole. And I blame a lot of this on our trade policies, especially NAFTA. And you look at what happened yesterday. When it comes to trade, there's only one party in this country, evidently, because those trade agreements, they just sailed through.
It's amazing. Yeah. The highest percentage of Democratic representatives and senators voted against their president on this. But if we're diving into this, Rick, I personally would say NAFTA didn't work. We see the huge jump in our trade deficit with Canada and Mexico, and that's notwithstanding oil. They have a huge jump up, a loss of jobs. We see the loss of jobs in Mexico as well. So NAFTA didn't work. CAFTA, same model. Now we have three new agreements, Panama, Colombia, and South Korea, negotiated by the Bush administration. Now, what does President Obama do? He comes in with the support of labor, and yet he's taken those agreements and introduced them, and they sailed through. It's astonishing. It makes me start to understand why people are going down and occupying Wall Street. Because
absolutely.
I feel like neither party has our best interest at heart.
And it's angering because, you know, I sat, you know, just feet away from the guy.
Mm-hmm.
I sat feet away from the president, and he said, you know what, we're just going to have strong labor and environmental thing. Well, here's the clip right here.
Trust me when I say that whenever trade deals we negotiate come to my desk, they are going to be good for American workers, that they'll have powerful labor and environmental protections, and that we will enforce those protections.
Well, you know, you look at these bills. Do they have that?
No. A good way to look at this, if anyone's curious, Global Trade Watch, you can Google that. Global Trade Watch did a great analysis of them. They have a press release out on their disappointment at seeing these agreements pass. And the simplest thing to look at is the Commerce Department did studies on these trade agreements that showed they will actually increase our trade deficit and result in lost jobs. So our own government has told us these are no wins for the U.S. economy, and yet we pushed them through anyway. And I love that you played that clip, Rick, because we held a candidates forum in April 2008 in Pittsburgh, and we have on tape President Obama, when he was a senator then, saying that George Bush was a, quote, patsy on trade with China, and that he would stand up to China and say, if you don't start enforcing your agreements, your responsibilities, if you don't stop manipulating your currency, we will take action and start closing off our market. But he hasn't followed through on any of that.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I mean, I know it's fodder for beating up on the president. And look, come next November, I will be voting for him against any one of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs on the Republican side. But you know, we got to hold him accountable when he does not hold up to his end of the bargain.
Yeah, it's inexplicable. I don't know if we're out of time, but it is interesting. Some of the Republican candidates are making very strong comments about China. Mitt Romney saying that if he were elected on day one, he would cite China as a currency manipulator.
Yep.
John Huntsman also talking tough on China, on currency, as I understand it. So funny that they're picking up on the mood of the country. This is what people want to hear.
Absolutely. Steve Capizzola, I appreciate the time. Great work you do over there at the Alliance for American Manufacturing. I appreciate the time.
Thanks, Rick. Take care.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break. I'm right back after this. Stick around.
Millions in this country don't have a dime to spare. Multi-billions in this country don't have a dime to spare. Multi-billions in this country don't have a dime to spare. Multi-billions in this country don't have a dime to spare. Multi-billions in this country don't have a dime to spare. Multi-billions in this country don't have a dime to spare. Multi-billions in this country that not a dime is spare.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make that happen!
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Thought back to America. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast from our website. Or if you've got a smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app and take your program on the go. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. So, a new NBC Wall Street Journal poll out shows that, you know what? The American people, they're supporting Occupy Wall Street. In fact, by a 2-to-1 margin. 37% of folks say they're absolutely in favor, 18% opposed. Now, that's kind of a difference between the Tea Party, who has a pretty high negativity rate, with only 28% saying they're in favor of the Tea Party, while 41% are opposed. And you're looking at a lot of the polls out there, the new Time Magazine poll, same thing. People are positive. People are looking for good things out of the Occupy Wall Street folks and what's going on around the country. 54% held favorable views of the occupation movement. 27% in favor of the Tea Party. So you're seeing people waking up and going, hey, I get it. I get it. I get, the Tea Party pretty angry out there, all about me. The occupation people, a little bit more community-minded. A little more community-minded, worrying about, hey, how are we going to take care of each other? You know, how are we going to have an economy that works? And I think this is a conversation that absolutely needs to be had. This is the right time to be having it. And I'm hoping it doesn't get pigeonholed by some of these narrow-minded folks in portions of the mainstream media. But, you know, you hear this all the time. Well, they don't know why they're out there. Yeah, they do know why they're out there. They're out there because they're mad. They're ticked off. The economy's not working for them. College kids were told, hey, you know, you go to college, you take on this huge debt, and that's your ticket to the middle class. They've been saying that for a generation now. Take on those big loans. Yes, that's your way to that's your golden ticket. So they took on these huge loans. There's no job at the end. You know what's at the end? Internships, free labor. That's what's at the end. Most of these kids I talked to, most of the college kids I talked to, that's where they went. Got out of college, took an intern job, hoping that maybe, oh, possibly someone would hire them. Doesn't happen. On to the next intern. You know why they're out there? The rising inequality that we have in this country. When you have a nation where 1%, where that 1% controls 40% of the wealth, you've got a problem. You've got a problem when the top 1% owns more than half of all stocks and bonds in this country. You got a real problem when that 1% takes nearly a quarter of the total national income. There's a problem. And these folks get it. You also have a problem when 1% takes more in income than the bottom 40%. And be it, capital gains or anything else. You got problems here. And what you've also got, and these kids see it, they saw their parents struggling through it, job losses, benefit losses, health problems. I don't want to end up like that. You know, what happened to the opportunity of moving up, starting out like I did in a housing project, moving into a solid middle-class neighborhood? We're seeing shrinking income mobility. People want their kids to do better than they did. And they want to be able to do better themselves than their parents did. But the way things are going today, man, what's going on is we're seeing this kind of stratification where the only way, the only movement is downward. And you see this rigged tax code where gambling is rewarded more than work. When you have a system set up on, hey, yeah, go to Wall Street and gamble your money, and you reward that more than you do someone actually working for a living, there's a problem there. And you look at, Buffett. Buffett's, you can say what you want about the guy. He's pointing out an obvious flaw in our system. The fact that here's a guy who almost made $63 million and had a payroll tax of $15,300. That's Social Security and Medicare, man. That's that cap. You want to solve our Social Security problems? Take that cap away. And then what does he pay up to $63 million? But overall, what did he pay in taxes? 17.4%. I know electricians, I know carpenters, I know people who pay higher rates than that. People are angry. I look at these occupations. Things are rigged against them, and people feel that on a visceral level. In New York, the people who are there, the Occupy New York people, they're using something that they call the people's microphone. And the reason that they're using the people's microphone, which is I say something and everybody repeats it and repeats it and repeats it so everybody can hear. The reason they're doing that is they can't use bullhorns. They can't use PA systems. There's no way of getting one person's voice out. The wealth class doesn't have that problem. The top 1% never has that problem. They've got Fox News. They own virtually every talk radio show. You name it, they're behind it. Their ability to make massive campaign contributions, their high-powered, high-priced lobbyists, now corporations have the same rights as you and me, only they're immortal. People get that. You think that people really want to be screaming at the top of their lungs to be heard? No, they'd love to have Fox News. They would love to have the ability to be heard. And this is where you have this problem. This is where people are starting to wake up and get it. This Real Jobs Act that the Republicans have come up with, it's the same failed policy that got us into the mess that we're in now. Only it's doubling down. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. Drowning in crap and lies. Save the USA and resume the size of mine. Stop taking all our money and shipping it offshore. Do the job and join the group.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show. It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News, I'm Doug Cunningham. Hundreds of Chicago Teachers Union members and community allies converged on Bank of America's headquarters Wednesday demanding that the bank renegotiate toxic financial deals with city schools. The Chicago Teachers Union's Matthew Luskin.
There are two very clear things that we would like to have come out of this. We would like to see Bank of America and the other banks with these agreements to agree to renegotiate. For the Board of Education and other elected officials out there to support us in this. They should be out here supporting us, calling on these banks to renegotiate.
The AFL-CIO says that the 99% of the country who want jobs should take careful note of how each U.S. senator voted on President Obama's American Jobs Act. The Labor Federation says the unanimous Republican opposition to the jobs bill reflects shamelessly distorted priorities. The AFL-CIO says it's appalling that the GOP is blocking the American Jobs Act. Chrysler UAW workers are the last workers at the Detroit 3 voting on the tentative deal reached with the union. UAW President Bob King says the Chrysler deal brings 2,100 more U.S. auto jobs. The Detroit 3 deals combined, he says, will add more than 20,000 new direct jobs. It means billions of dollars in U.S. auto industry investments, but compensation increases for most of the auto workers came in the form of bonuses and profit sharing rather than in wage increases. Every year, the Center for Studying Health System Change hosts a conference in Washington, D.C. called Wall Street Comes to Washington. As Jesse Russell reports, this year, it was far from business as usual.
This year, they might as well have called it Occupy Wall Street Comes to Washington, as the conference was disrupted by protesters, saying that Wall Street has no place in healthcare. The panelists at the conference represented Citigroup, City Investment Research, Morgan Stanley, and Goldman Sachs. Dr. Margaret Flowers spoke out at the conference.
2 million people in this country a year can't get cancer treatment. They have to choose between cancer treatment and sending their children to college. You should be ashamed. Every single one of you should be ashamed for what you're part of. If you're in here, you're with Wall Street. You should be outside with us.
Outside of the conference, Adarla Scarlett told the story of her father, who took his own life because he didn't want his health care costs to be a burden on his children.
Says verbatim in his note, he says, I'm sure you understand that this was something I had to do. Getting old and ill without money is simply not an option in this country.
She said she traveled to D.C. from Colorado to be a voice for people like her father.
Every person that dies from lack of access to health care is somebody's father or son or daughter, and I'm here today to stand up not only for my father but for all those like him.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your working class radio experience. Where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left. Rich and bomb red.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. So it appears tomorrow morning, Mayor Bloomberg going to send in the melon crackers and clear out the park because they just want to clean, want to spruce it up a little bit, make sure the flowers are all nice and pretty, and make sure it's just clean for the people to come back to. And if you believe that, I've got a whole bunch of stuff on sale. Anyway, to talk a little bit about that, also his new book, Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, Greg Palast. Greg, thanks for taking time for me.
Glad to be with you, Rick.
The one thing I got to give you credit for right off the bat, you always come up with the most creative and fun-to-say book titles.
Well, I hope the whole book is fun. not just the title, Rick. Come on, give me a break.
No, I mean,
there's a subtitle to the subtitle, which you'll like. It's for Vulture's Picnic, A Tale of Big Oil, Sex, Shoes, Radiation, and Investigative Reporting.
There you go.
There you go.
I wish I love that. Okay. And I wish we had more investigative reporters like yourself digging into this stuff instead of the fluff I see on the evening news.
Well, I wish we had more Ricks around because, and by the way, and your audience will appreciate this, this book is dedicated to Frank Gross, the head of the United Electrical Workers, at the front of the book. That's very important to me.
Like the Occupy Wall Street, your book has been co-opted by big labor.
Yes, exactly. I hope so. In fact, I was just down at Wall Street yesterday morning, and there's a guy walked across the street. I thought it was a tourist with his daughter or something, and I said, so what do you think of it, of what's going on? And he says, well, I'm here to support my brothers. He had his 9th Infantry cap on, shop steward from Longshoremen's Union, and that's what was there. It looked like any day on a Saturday on a street in New York, except compressed. The images they show is, young kids, long hair, whatever, but it's the entire city is there represented, or 99% of the city, I should say.
Yeah, it isn't just the violent hippies.
They can't decide whether it's like Woodstock. They're trying to portray it as kind of Woodstock 4, but it's not. People are just, it's amazing because it's like not one particular group or anything. It's like all these types of people just like they've had it. And, of course, I went down there for BBC television. A lot of people, if they know me in the U.S., I report for BBC. But I broke that story about how Catherine Harris knocked off thousands of black people at the voter rolls in Florida in 2000.
My favorite one being the guy who was going to commit a felony years into the future. They read his mind. They knew what he was going to do, and they threw him off the rolls even before he had a chance.
That's right. I found 500 felons of the future on their scrub list. And it's interesting, all the criminals who are going to commit their crimes, therefore should lose their vote in advance, 80% were African-American. Okay, so that's the type. So I do this old stuff called investigative reporting, which, for The Guardian and BBC, because it's, investigative reporting, as you know, is not permitted under Patriot Act 4 in the United States, but I'm doing it here anyway, undercover. And it's about the Vulture's Picnic. Is about the 1%. So that's why I went down to Wall Street, looked at the 99 before, I headed off to my Grimmer work, where this takes place over in five continents, but begins in New York. I'm telling you, I was doing a stakeout at dawn in front of a guy's house, and he really calls himself Goldfinger. These are the 1%. These are the characters that are the supposed job creators, as the Republicans like to call him. So Goldfinger's idea of job creation is to seize the economy of Zambia through some legal financial maneuver and demand, basically, they have to turn over all their AIDS medicine money, the money for AIDS medicine given by the U.S. and Britain to this vulture.
No.
Well, I'm outside his house, bigger than the Vatican, let me tell you, and waiting for Mr. 1% to find out how he I had evidence of bribery. These guys don't make, the 1% don't make their money by creating jobs.
Nope.
They get it the old-fashioned way. They steal it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's the story. And that's the core, is the story of them and us, that 1%. And I go from the vultures to Deepwater Horizon explodes, and I get a message. The Caspian Sea. You like this, Rick? I see the Deepwater Horizon explode. BP. Oh, it's never happened. Oh my God, it's an accident. This, we could have never expected this. Message from the Caspian Sea. And I don't want to give away too much, but again, I ended up working with the Oil Workers Union out of Aberdeen in Scotland. I get a message from the Caspian Sea. Can't reveal who I am. I knew the identity using the official systems, but this has happened exactly before. The Deepwater Horizon was a reprieve. It had happened exactly the same blowout had happened 2 years before in the Caspian Sea on a BP rig. They covered it up, the same crap, cheap cement that they used, the whole thing, exactly the same. They never told the U.S. government. They purged it from their SEC statements. They went before Congress, British Petroleum and Chevron and Exxon. And by the way, they're oil company brothers, because they all had a piece of that action in the Caspian, knew all about the secret blowout. They all covered up. They testified under oath that this could not, they've never had a problem. Boom. Months after they testify, same thing has happened in the Caspian.
Yeah, but is it any surprise? I mean, what you said is no real surprise. It's just, do you have the information to back that up in your book, Vulture's Picnic?
Yeah. Well, in a way, Vulture's Picnic is the first time, unlike The Best Democracy Money Can Buy and Our Man Out, the bestsellers are
which I loved.
But the thing is that they told you the story that I found. Now I'm telling you the story as I'm finding it. So you get behind. So, for example, when that guy tells me this, I'm floating in the Caspian Sea. Here's the info, but I can't reveal who I am. Well, I got it. That's a pretty darn serious charge. 11 guys were incinerated.
Yep.
And so I take off for the Caspian, and on the way, I figure, how do you cover up you know, another blowout of that order. The answer is with a lot of money, you know, with a lot of bribe money.
Spread
so
that
of
around.
Course I, yeah, get a hold of a CIA agent who's head of Helsinki Station for the CIA and their resource division. He's now a billionaire from the information he got from the agency. And he's a partner with BP in the Caspian Sea. But dig this, he really cannot stand these guys because there's one thing he won't tolerate, despite his game, is bribery. And he said BP covered this all up. They cover everything up with massive multi-million-dollar bribes. And I said, well, how do you know that they're bribing? That's a hell of an accusation. And he says, well, I've got the invoice. I met this guy in a safe house. No kidding.
Wow.
And it's a very big billionaire oil man now. And he says, because they sent me an invoice because he's their partner. So they sent him an invoice for his share of the bribe. I kid you not. He showed it to me. It's in the book.
He gets a percentage of the take.
Yeah, he has like 15% of the Caspian Sea, so they made him pay 15% of the bribe. So he said, no, not me. And so then we went off to the Caspian. So in the meantime, I stop in Britain to meet with a former BP executive who's also an MI6 agent. Now, a number of BP execs who are also MI6 intelligence, that's the old James Bond spy agency,
right,
is quite numerous. And he's telling me about, you know, more money and, you know, the hookers that he arranged for the BP execs and the leaders of these little countries. Where we were going to was the nation of Azerbaijan. If you've never heard of it, don't worry about it yet. You will hear about it because that's our next oral war. It's the capital of Baku. But, you know, Rick, most Americans don't know the capitals of nations until the 86th airborne arrives. You know, it's Mogadishu.
It's
Kabul,
geography by
Saigon.
Bomb, sure.
I mean, whoever heard of these places until we went there, right? So, but that Baku is where we're going next because of the oil. And so I show up in Baku, and I ask too many questions, and I get arrested. And, of course, the secret police, the ministry, the security ministry, as they like to call themselves, grabs me. And, of course, they want the film from our BBC cameras. And so we give them the film, the thing we say. And then, but I do have, what they didn't do is take away my pen. But my pen is one of those little Austin Power jobs, which has a video camera in it. So I got the film out.
Good for you.
Yeah, so it's a story not only of the evil stuff that the 1% do. When I say evil, I mean it's pretty grim.
Not only is it
also weirdly funny because I try to give you the investigation.
Not only is it investigative reporting, it's also a mystery, a story, and you know, hijinks in the whole ball of wax.
Yeah, it's a bit of a spy show. I mean, I enjoyed it because it was that kind of like espionage, Sam Spade story. But see, I'm not really. Unlike Sam Spade, you know, I've got the twins, marital problems, you know, trying to fight a little bit of a drinking habit, et cetera, and trying to stay out of trouble, which is almost impossible. And in fact, actually, I fail quite miserably. And what they do to get you. So it's not only the financial vultures, the oil guys, but then we go, when Fukushima blew up, I said, uh-oh. When the earthquake hit, I said, that nuclear plant's going to melt down. And my assistant, actually chief investigator, Ms. Badpenny, which is really her name, says, how do you know? I said, because they faked the seismic test. Seismic test is earthquake-proof.
Right.
And I knew it because how do I know that? I used to be a racketeering investigator for the government. When we had a government, they actually investigated. And I was investigating one of the biggest racketeering cases in American history of a company called Stone & Webster Nuclear. And I had the engineers' notebooks where they're saying, we're faking the seismic test, the earthquake proofing, and this is against federal regulation X, and what are we going to do? We could go to jail for this. But they did, it was that or lose their job. But I have the actual documents to see those in the books, too, and how we got them, which is sad and weird and funny and sick, and how these guys got away with it. And the same company, the Obama administration's agreed with Congress, of course, to give $8 billion to build four new nuclear plants. It's our guarantees out of our pockets to build these nuclear plants, and it's the same guys that faked the safety documents, the same characters.
Well, when money's involved, there's no surprising. There's nothing that surprises me.
Well, you know, and of course, you know, I'm naive too. I mean, so they decided they got to discredit the investigator. So they used they did a little bit of a spitzer on me. They tried to actually it was almost effective. There
hookers.
Is actually a good reason, Rick, why I was in that young woman's room.
Of course,
without
is.
My clothes on. I guarantee
oh,
you,
I can't
have
wait.
To read the book.
I can't wait to hear about this. And again, the book is Vulture's Picnic in Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates and High Finance Carnivores. The last question I've got for you, why Vulture's Picnic?
Why? Because they've turned our economy into a carcass, and they're just picking us apart. And I want you to know who these vultures are. I want you to meet their trophy wives, and I want you to be able to visit your money by taking a look at their palaces and homes. And I want you to know about how they got their money and the blood and the blood that floated it their way. So these are the vultures who basically can't wait for our economy to die so they can pick it to pieces. So that's why it's Vulture's Picnic. And by the way, you can see there's films that are associated with it. It's one of these enhanced books. Things first time from Penguin with film in the book, and you can go see some of that at vulturespicnic.org and or gregpalace.com.
And we will have a link at our site at therickSmithShow.com. Again, Vulture's Picnic, I guess it's out November 14th?
That's right. You can, you know, pre-order it now, but to go and see the films about it and get some of the information. I want people to get the info. That's the key thing.
All right, we will most certainly do that. Make sure we get a link at our site. Greg, always great talking with you. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Rick, you're the best.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Drive off in your automobile.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Five men suddenly found themselves faced with an all-out attack on their territory. Five men confronted by a hostile power. But these five men looked destiny in the eye, and then they suited up and took care of business. This sounds like a heroic action movie, but these guys are hardly heroes. They're the top executives of the giant paper maker, Temple Inland, and the power confronting them was International Paper, an even gianter corporation. International was making a hostile bid to take over Temple Inland, swallow the competitor whole, and spit out the five executives. Sensing this, our heroes did indeed take care of business, their own. And when I said they suited up, it was not in battle gear, but in golden parachutes. Shareholders were recently sent a cryptic message from the corporation urging them to approve, quote, the compensation that may be paid to Temple Inland's named executive officers. Those would be our five self-serving stalwarts who negotiated the takeover deal, including CEO Doyle Simons. How much compensation? Simons is to get $8.8 million in cash, $29 million in stock payments, a $6 million pension, and $16 million in tax reimbursement. Yes, not only is Doyle getting a golden parachute, but the company is also paying the taxes he'll owe on the gold he takes with him. The top five leaders are bailing out of Temple Inland with a total of $162 million to cushion their fall from the corporate pinnacle. Not so fortunate are some 10,000 of the corporation's common workers who were abandoned to the merciless god of mergers, which always requires sacrifices of jobs in these situations. This is Jim Hightower saying, bosses get the gold, workers get the shaft, and International Paper gets market control. Where's Teddy Roosevelt when we need him to bust these merger merchants?
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Question, comment, something on your mind, you can also email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I always like Greg Palast's books. Armed Madhouse was fantastic. The Best Democracy Money Can Buy was terrific as well. And in The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, he actually went through the whole DBT thing, which, a lot of people didn't get that, Jeb Bush at the time had hired this company to go through and scrub through their voter rolls and look for those felons. And basically what they did is, if your name was Rick Smith, maybe Smith is a predominantly African-American name, and there was a felon named Rick Smith. You went, you took Eric Smith and Richard Smith and Dick Smith and Rick Smith and all the juniors and the thirds and the fourth, and you scrubbed all of them. They were all kicked off the voting rolls. And our mainstream corporate-controlled for-profit media just glanced right over it. In fact, in his book, I think it was something like 91,000 people they booted off the voting rolls. And when you went through and you looked at the people that they booted off, like he said, 500 of them were people who were going to commit felonies in the future. And I wish somebody would go back and check those 500. Maybe they did. Maybe on that day they figured, well, if I'm going to be convicted of it, I might as well do it today. I don't know. Interesting. But great author, and I really like Greg Palast. One of those guys who, he's a bit of a self-promotionist, I guess it's okay, but he also does the digging and the hard work. Check out his book, Vulture's Picnic, vulturespicnic.org. It will be for sale, I guess, November 14th is the day. So I did the Smart Talk thing this evening, and very nice folks over there. What I find amazing is nobody seems to get this whole Occupy thing. There are no specific leaders. The whole idea is that they're all leaders. By being there, they're all part of it. They're all leaders in their own way, and being part of that is kind of the point. And I think it's hard for people to understand that concept, that you don't have someone that you're following. And they kept trying to pin me down. I had said, early on, I've said this before, and it's nothing new, Jake. I've said that, early on, the Tea Party thing popped up. I agreed with it right at the very beginning. So then they're saying, well, you were a Tea Party member. No, I agreed with their principles, and I went to a meeting or two, and I went to a couple of their rallies to look around, and they just took a really bizarre rightward turn, and they lost me at that very point.
The interesting thing about these demonstrations right now, Rick, there's a plus and a minus. You just mentioned the fact that I don't know that they're leaderless, but there's no one person that's taking charge. That's a strength, because you have so many people coming there for so many different reasons. But in the end, if we're going to take it to the next level, that can be a weakness. And the question is, where do we go from there? There's certainly enough Americans that are so disgusted with the system. The question is, how do you draw from that? How do you get the people to really get out and really, in a constructive way, change this country? And that's not an easy task.
Yeah, and one of the things they said, on the show is that, I'm an organizer. No, I'm going to participate. I'm going to attend. I've gone to a meeting. We want to be part of it. But I don't know that organizer. I think everybody involved. And that's just the way, maybe that's how I'm looking at it. That by having everyone there, you're going to be able to have your point of view, and it'll go to the General Assembly. And as I've said before, this whole idea of Athenian democracy is it's excruciatingly painful to go through. But at the end, I think everybody will have the ability to speak and have the ability to flesh out ideas. And that's the conversation. I think that was the main common point between everyone, that the conversation has to be had. We have a system that is really skewed. When you have 1% of the population controlling 40% of the wealth, you have a major problem. When that 1% controls over half of all stocks and bonds, you have a major problem. And the Tea Party people, where they went crazy, is they were saying, well, you know, we're not going to do anything. We're not going to raise any taxes. And you guys want to redistribute wealth? And I go, yeah, I do. I think I'm the only person who's very honest about the idea of redistributing wealth. I'd like to have it redistributed the way it was before it was redistributed. I would like to have a strong, burgeoning middle class. What's happened over the past 40 years is my grandparents' generation built a society based on taking care of people, based on having a social safety net so that nobody falls through the cracks, based on having strong labor protections, strong environmental protections, and you built this middle class. You built this group of people who were able to go to work and raise their kids and send them to college and take a vacation and retire with some security. That's all being stripped away. And you're damn right I want to redistribute it. 40%. 1% of the people control 40% of the wealth. There is a massive problem. Massive problem. So how do we go and how do we change that? How do we do that? Well, you do that by having this national conversation, which is what has come out of this. And, you know, it didn't just happen overnight. There was planning that went into this. But, you know, having this conversation is really, really so important.
Well, if it did anything, and you're right about this, Rick, this didn't just happen. This has been fermenting, you could say, for months and probably for the last couple of years. I think it certainly has got the attention of the president, and I think there's some Democrats that might tend to lean towards the middle that are finally getting it, that the middle class is just fed up. We're fed up, we're angry, and a lot of people are saying we're not going to take it anymore. But as much as I disagree with Governor Rendell on some things, I think he's right. How do we transform this into a political force? And I think at the end of the day, if we're going to make change, we've got to do more than just protest.
But you have to build this first. And where I think the Rendell frame fails is that this idea we're gonna win it back at the ballot box. Yeah, down the road. Right now, this thing needs to build. This thing needs to grow. And, you know, just, hey, go back into the shadows. Hey, go back into your house. Go back into your parents' basement. Go back into the shelters. Go back into the dark recesses of our society. Basically going to separate people again. And to me, that's the problem. This idea, we'll do it at the ballot box eventually.
I think there's a middle ground, Rick, and this is just me.
Not looking for middle ground.
Well, but here's my point. Not compromising, this is what I mean. Let's take these protests and let's expand them. Let's try to have 1 or 2 day huge protests. Keep these people involved in the process. Next year, hopefully, then we get them involved in the political. Well, that's what.
Here you are trying to manage what they don't want managed, which is why they're trying to keep people out. Let this be a forum for people to come and participate and voice their opinion and have the feeling that their opinion matters and their voice matters. Allow this to grow and do this. Having 1 or 2 big rallies, that's not what this is about. Sitting down next to people, and I firmly believe people need to talk to each other. You know, you do it wherever, in the park, the Capitol steps, wherever, but you have to have these conversations. You can't, I don't think at this point you can micromanage this. I just don't. Because nothing's happened here yet, really. I mean, there are a couple of people out there, but Friday night, what would you want Friday night? Have the big rally, and in the morning, oh, we made it tonight, let's go home?
At some point, Rick, the process can't be rudderless. I understand what you're saying. Yes, people have to get together. They have to talk. It has to be a one-on-one human. But at some point, it can't be rudderless. And there has to be, at least in a general sense, we got to push it even ever so gently along and try to make progress. I mean, this has the potential to change the country if it's done right, and that's not going to be an easy task.
Well, we'll see what comes up out of it. I mean, it's not something we're going to be able to control, but it is something we will participate in. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Christy Setzer. She's an advisor to U.S. Chamber Watch. It looks like there's some trouble in the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We're right back after this.
community come together. The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask Me Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, Ask Me Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make that way to happen.
There is no America. There is no democracy. There is only IBM and ITT and AT&T and DuPont, Dow, Union Carbide, and Exxon. Those are the nations of the world today.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So it looks like, according to Politico's morning tech report, that the tech giant Yahoo has quietly left the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. The company evidently would not give a reason for its departure, but Politico claims that they have been clashing with the chamber over the Protect IP Act, which is a bill that would limit activities on websites accused of using copyrighted material. According to the U.S. Chamber Watch, more than 50 local Chamber of Commerce and a dozen major corporations have abandoned or disavowed the U.S. Chamber of Commerce for their radical positions and pay-to-play model, according to Politico. And look, you know, we've been talking about the U.S. Chamber for some time. To me, it shouldn't be the U.S. Chamber. It's the International Chamber. And basically just another arm of the Republican Party. But here to help us work through some of this is Chrissy Setzer. She's an advisor for the U.S. Chamber Watch Group, their website, fixtheuschamber.org. Chrissy, thanks for taking time for me.
Thanks for having me.
You know, most people think of the Chamber of Commerce, they think of, you know, that nice group that plants flowers down in Town Square and promotes the local businesses and does wonderful things like, sponsors Little League. That's not the chamber we're talking about.
No, it's not. And in fact, in most cases, the local chamber has absolutely no connection to the U.S. chamber whatsoever. There's something like 8,000 local chambers, and maybe something in the neighborhood of 250 of them are actually connected to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. So most people don't realize that there's actually very little connection between the two. The difference, of course, is that the U.S. chamber, as you already said, is basically an arm of the Republican Party. They're funded in large measure by a very small handful of very large corporations. To give one example, in 2009, we learned that about 55%, so more than half the chamber's $200 million lobbying budget, came from just 16 companies.
Wow.
So this is not, this isn't a grassroots organization by any stretch.
And these, I'm sure, are multinational corporations.
That's right. And, and the agendas of these companies are pretty clear as well. And we learn them when we figure out the kind of issues that the chamber is working on behalf of. So maybe one clear example was last year when we learned that that AHIP, America's Health Insurance Plans, had given the chamber $86 million to run the campaign to kill the health reform bill. And so, you know, it's no surprise that it's companies like Pfizer, for example, that are part of the chamber, or companies like, you know, Prudential that they're working with to kill Wall Street reform, or, you know, companies like Caterpillar, for example, that they're working with in order to help outsource jobs and send them overseas.
So basically they're the pit bull for the big multinationals who don't want to get their fingers dirty.
That's exactly right, yeah. And in fact, the funny thing about this is that they're utterly, this is the one area in which they're utterly transparent. They say that, you know, this is exactly what we've set out to do. And a great quote from Tom Donahue is he said, you know, we're here to provide companies with, quote, all the deniability they need, you know, basically to go out and do these politically unpopular or, you know, publicly unsavory things. And then, you know, we'll just take the hits for them.
And one of the other things, one of my biggest pet peeves with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, kind of goes along with my favorite billionaire. Because I think everybody, you know, if we're going to be a country that that idolizes billionaires and gives them everything they want, we should at least have a favorite. And mine is number 332, Stephen Schatz Biscotti. He owns the Baltimore Ravens, but he made his money outsourcing. So he made his money by shipping jobs overseas. And I look at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce as that conduit. And I know they hold meetings all across the country and across the globe on how to get U.S. companies to move to places like China and India.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, there could not be a bigger hypocrisy here. Here's a company, I mean, here's an organization that, you know, at their headquarters here in D.C., they have an enormous sign that hangs across the side of the building that says J-O-B-S, jobs. And yet, you know, even just this week, they lobbied to kill the American Jobs Act. Why? Of course, because they didn't like the millionaires' tax in it.
Right.
And the other thing that they're, you know, lobbying pretty hard for right now is the tax repatriation holiday.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, you know, but basically allows companies it allows them to, you know, have a holiday on the profits that they've made overseas. So when we did this in 2004, what we learned from this experiment was that it certainly enabled companies to not create jobs here in the U.S., but to send them overseas instead. And what U.S. Chamber Watch learned in a report that we did on this issue is that an extra benefit for the CEOs of these chamber companies is that they were able to personally profit, because basically they could take the profits that they generated overseas and have them in the form of, like, stock buybacks. So essentially, some of the profits could go directly into the chamber CEO's pocket, all the while, you know, cutting jobs in America.
So as I hear this repatriation thing, again, we've tried this. It's failed. It didn't create jobs. And as you pointed out, it created great wealth for the CEOs. It created great wealth for the investor class. And in addition to doing that, also cost hundreds of thousands of jobs.
Absolutely.
So why would we be considering doing it again?
Well, you know, because the chamber's lobby is, you know, really on behalf of these CEOs. I mean, that's exactly what their business model is.
What's amazing to me is, you know, no one's talking about stopping the practice. I mean, we have a tax code that allows them to hold money offshore, to let it build up, let it build up, let it build up, so they can come back and say, oh, we have $1.3 trillion. If we brought it back here, we might maybe create a janitor's job. Please let it bring it back. And when they do, they don't create any jobs, and then they just keep doing it again. I say get rid of the deferral. Say, you got to pay tax on it. I don't care. Every year you pay your taxes, every working person.
Of course. I mean, look, the biggest example is, of course, that right now, you know, corporations here in the U.S. are sitting on $2 trillion in profits. Their tax levels are at the lowest level in 50 years, and we still have 14 million unemployed, you know, Americans. So I don't really think they really need too many more incentives to create jobs. You know, what are they going to do with that profit? Are they just going to pocket it?
It's just nuts. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Christy Setzer. She's what is your relationship with the U.S. Chamber Watch?
You know, I am their communications director. I'm an advisor. Yeah.
Okay, good, an advisor. The website, fixtheuschamber.org. We've got a link at therickssmithshow.com. Just click on Christie's name. It'll take you right there. You know, for me, I look at the elections coming up, the next year, the presidential election, and I look at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce as the conduit for the international corporations. How much foreign money from other countries is coming into the U.S.? This was a big thing before the last election. Have they looked at this? Have they done anything to correct, say, Chinese companies funneling money through the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, through these AmJams, and actually influencing our elections?
No, I mean, this obviously is, you know, is something that became a big deal, you know, before the, in the fall last year. And then it sort of died down and went away. And the issue is that the money that's coming into the chamber, I mean, they basically made the argument that, oh, well, we sort of have separate pots of money. And that's, you know, a little bit hard to believe. It's not super credible that, that the money that's coming in from these AmJams is actually going to absolutely stay separate from the money that's going to be spent in their political programs. But the one thing that we can expect this cycle is, well, a couple things. One, the chamber has said that they will stand down in the presidential race. Now, they said this in the past, and it's largely true, but that doesn't mean that they're not going to get very, very active at the, you know, sort of state and federal level outside of the presidential races. And also this year, you know, that more than ever before, we're going to see activity in these groups like American Crossroads. The relationship between the chamber and Crossroads is a pretty it's a pretty direct line. The general counsel at the chamber, Stephen Law, actually left the chamber to go over and start American Crossroads. So they're sort of like the granddaddy of all of these, you know, these outside money groups. And they'll definitely continue to play a role there, too.
Yeah, they're at the center of all this. And, you know, I look at this, and I'm still fuming mad over yesterday's free trade votes.
Mm-hmm.
83 senators, 83 in the U.S. Senate voted for the South Korean free trade agreement, even though the good majority of the people in this country don't want any more of these job-killing free trade agreements. And I look at the influence, the Chamber of Commerce very heavily lobbying on behalf of these trade agreements, and they got their wish.
That's right. And, you know, I mean, I think that even, as you said, 83 senators, even a lot of Democrats still believe that the endorsement of the U.S. Chamber is a good one for them to have, even as, you know, local chambers across the country are leaving because of their partisanship, even though, you know, in the last election, the chamber, their chamber ad spent 93% on behalf of Republicans. And even in the rare, rare cases where they did actually endorse a Democrat, it was typically with, you know, a fraction of the money that they would spend on a Republican. And yet, you know, you have to think that there's some influence here in where, you know, that many Democrats are voting the way the chamber is telling them to.
That's amazing. Last question I've got for you. On your website, you've got a headline, the U.S. Chamber outshouts average citizens. And I'm thinking of the folks, you know, on Wall Street, the Occupy Wall Street people, using the people's microphone, where they, when the speaker says something and everybody who hears it repeats it because they don't have a choice. They don't have a PA system or a megaphone or any of that stuff. But, you know, like the Chamber of Commerce, they've got the ability, to get out through Fox. They've got the ability to buy all the media they need.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, speaking of Occupy Wall Street, we were, out there, U.S. Chamber Watch, and a lot of other people, the other day. Standing in front of the U.S. Chamber headquarters, and, you know, standing right in front of that sign that ironically says, you know, jobs in front of it and shouting, where are the jobs?
Yep.
And it was a pretty powerful image. So
yeah, I wish someone would put up a big sign right across from it. Where?
Right, exactly.
Because they are creating jobs. I give them credit. They are creating millions and millions of jobs.
Yes.
Yeah. In places like China and India, absolutely. Christy Zetzer, I appreciate your time. Media consultant with U.S. Chamber Watch. FixTheUSChamber.org is the website. We've got a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. Christy, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Smith Show.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
My name is Toya. I'm a sales rep, and I work for Capital Blue Cross.
If you're choosing Medicare coverage, Toya will meet you anywhere to help you decide.
I met him at food courts, diners, the parks, on a bench, and today we're meeting at airport.
Mike was a Navy service person, an engineer, and a pilot.
I'm a senior blue BPO member.
He is technically retired.
I'm a gray-haired teenager.
Mike appreciates the visit.
It's more personal, and you can talk easier. You can show emotion, which you can't over the telephone. And it's more caring.
Toya would agree.
I love my customers. I really, really do. My main objective is to show them that I care. When you care more, you do more.
For customer service, call 1-888-340-3978, Monday through Friday, 8 to 8, with extended hours October 15th through February 14th. Senior Blue PPO is issued by Capital Advantage Insurance Company, a Medicare Advantage organization with a Medicare contract. Capital Blue Cross and Capital Advantage Insurance Company are independent licensees of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Exposing GOP hypocrisy, The Rick Smith Show.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So Lincoln Chafee, the governor of Rhode Island, independent, who was also a Republican senator up until 2006, he says he doesn't even recognize Mitt Romney anymore. He says the former Massachusetts governor, you know, he keeps shifting his position so much, he's a completely different person. But here's the thing, you know, what he's saying is, look, you know, in this primary, in this Republican primary, he's got to change. But you know, that's just alien, to what's in the best interest of the country, according to Governor Chafee. And, you know, look, in order to win the Republican primary, you've got to pander to the extreme right. Which is what the Tea Party has done this. They have moved the Republican Party far to the right. And where I agree with you, Jake, is, you know, this occupation movement, hopefully they decide to take over the Democratic Party. I'm hoping the Democrats don't take them over. I'm hoping they take over the Democratic Party and start pushing for a lot of the things that they called for. I mean, Glass-Steagall, right from the beginning. Repeal Graham-Leach-Bliley, right from the start. That's important. You know, go back and, you know, get rid of that Citizens United decision. Pass legislation that money has to be transparent. Start taxing people fairly. You know, we've talked pretty extensively about the Buffett rule and some examples of how bad it has gotten. Start looking at what goes on Wall Street. The Tobin tax is a perfect example of how we take some of the speculation out of it. And, you know, maybe we actually fund some things. You know, it doesn't have to be a huge tax. Micro pieces of a penny. There are hundreds of millions of trades every day. There's so many other things that we could be looking into. Regulate how we spend money in the Pentagon. I was just looking at a story today that said the Pentagon needs like $8 billion more dollars just to get its finances in order. It needs like $8 billion to set up a system to tell it how much money it's wasting and losing.
And the Secretary of Defense just went on the air, I believe it was yesterday, and saying, we can't afford any more cuts, no more cuts. Can't do it.
You know, and I've been calling for the longest time for the Harry Truman type character to come out, hold hearings, hold people accountable. Where is every dime? You know, that's what Truman did during World War II. He went around and said, hey, we're not going to let people get rich off of this stuff. We're going to make sure that it's in the best interest of the country. We don't see that. We're not seeing it.
And where is the Senator Proxmire? When I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, The man was magnificent. He used to have the gold, remember the Golden Fleece Award? And the, what, the $1,000 toilet seats?
Mm-hmm.
If you think that doesn't still go on in Pentagon procurement, I think you're living in a dream world. It still does. And when you start talking about the Pentagon, then people say, well, you're weak in defense. Look, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars involved in the defense. And over a period of years, we're talking trillions. If you think that there's not fat in the Pentagon budget, again, I think you're living in a dream world. You can keep this country defended. You can keep our defense strong and still make the cuts where there's fat. And there is a lot of fat, and it's mostly in the corporate profits. Many times they're ripping the taxpayer off.
Well, I go back to Smedley Butler. You know, war is a racket. And then, you know, it's just a short read. Anybody who just Google War is a Racket or Major General Smedley Butler and read through it back in the 30s, he wrote an excellent little pamphlet. Very short, quick read. It's as true today as it was then. The corporate profiteers, the people who have lined their pockets, it's an absolute, absolute shame.
Well, what you were enumerating, Eric, what you want is a lot of things that were eliminated in the last 20, 30 years that emanated, those protections emanated from when? From the Great Depression, FDR. And again, Obama has the decision to make. I like so far where he's going. He's going to the left. Is he going to be an FDR? Is he going to be a Truman? Is he going to be a moderate like Bill Clinton? Harry Truman was somewhere in between FDR FDR and Bill Clinton.
Where's he going to the left? Did I miss that?
I think he has been. He's been attacking. He's been a, well, how about his jobs bill? That's a good start. How about his...
That jobs bill is not to the left.
Well, listen, no, wait a minute. But it's a step forward. American people are clamoring for that. I like the fact that they supported going after the Chinese. I like some of his...
Well, Obama hasn't said where he stands on that yet.
Well, come on now. He doesn't have any choice but to jump on board on that one. I like what he's done with some of these committees he's set up. He's talking about making sure that the American worker has the expertise for the technology that's going to be developed in the 21st century. I like the fact that he's pushing towards these powerful multinationals creating and keeping jobs here. I didn't hear that prior to this. Now, some of it is because his own caucus, his own constituency in Congress is saying, look, President, you got to stop. You got to get more aggressive. You're just catering to Wall Street too much. And I do believe he is going to the left. Now, is he going to go further? This movement, this protest movement, I think has the very real possibilities, Rick, of pushing him that way.
Well, and that's what I'm hoping. And that's why I don't want it to be co-opted. That's why I'm hoping that a lot of these things on this list, I don't think are all that left ideology-wise. I've had people tell me, well, that's the left-wing agenda. No, this is common sense. This is where I think we should be having our conversation. How do we get back to kitchen table economics? How do we get back to talking about an economy that works? Get rid of the fringe issues. I'm so tired of talking about abortion. I'm so tired of talking about gay rights. I'm tired of talking about the wedge issues. Let's talk about how we get this country moving again, how we get people back to work, how we get people able to retire with some dignity, health care, education, building a 21st century infrastructure. Those are the things I really want to talk about. But what have the Republicans done? You look here in the state of Pennsylvania. They want to steal your right to vote. They want to change 224 years of history with their election rigging job. They want to do all of this stuff. They want to take money away from Planned Parenthood. They want to take money away from NPR. They want to have bills that send women who are here in an undocumented fashion out of the country if they report domestic violence. I mean, where's the job stuff? Yeah, I know they came out with their big, the real jobs, real American Jobs Act today. What is it? It's nothing but a pile of the same crap that they've been trying to shove down our throats for 40 years. There's nothing new there. Nothing. But boy, they sure know how to spin. They sure know how to divide us. I mean, where are the jobs plans? I thought Corbett was going to be the jobs governor. What's he done? Mostly divisive stuff. In fact, you know, when I was over at the Smart Talk thing, some of the political insiders They were complaining that the legislature here in Pennsylvania has only been in session 30 days. And I'm saying, well, that's 30 days too many. Cut it down to 15. Be happy with that. The less time they're here, the less damage they can do. It's amazing to me. And everything that they do is not about creating jobs. It's about creating the next election cycle win. It's about creating fissures and divisions. It's about keeping us at each other's throats. It's just nuts. And I'm hoping that when these people take to the steps, I'm hoping that this conversation continues and folks say, you know what? You're right. Those are the issues we should be talking about. Regulating the banks. Break them up if you have to. Regulating an economy that makes sure everyone has the ability to make a living if they work hard. And redistribute wealth. Yes, I've said it. There you go. Anyone who disagrees, I'd love to hear your rational explanation why we shouldn't have a tax code that encourages work. And I'll go back to it. Day one when Obama took office, my biggest hope for him was that he would be the guy who saved work in this country, who rewarded hard work. Explain to me what the reward is when Buffett makes all of his money, you know, just gambling. Explain that to me. And he pays a less tax rate than a guy who's out here building roads and bridges and swinging a hammer building houses, actually building what this country needs. Doesn't make any sense.
Well, we have another problem in the political reality of America today, Rick. All too often there's too many Democrats that don't have the guts to stand up and stand with the working people. Look what just happened in this vote this week, Rick, on free trade. Too many Democrats voted with the corporate interest again. And I cringe when I hear Democrats saying I'm a blue dog. To me, that just means someone who has their priorities misplaced. If you're a Democrat, stand up and be one, be for the working people. And that's when the Democratic Party was the strongest. And I just talked to someone tonight, Rick, a leader in the labor movement, and he said he remembers when he was young, his dad said, without question, he said it's black and white. The Democrats stand for the working people. The Republicans stand for business. Unfortunately, it's not like that anymore.
83-22 on the South Korean free trade agreement. I'm going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
To the Rick Smith Show.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Hundreds of Chicago Teachers Union members and community allies converged on Bank of America's headquarters Wednesday demanding that the bank renegotiate toxic financial deals with city schools. The Chicago Teachers Union's Matthew Luskin.
There are two very clear things that we would like to have come out of this. We would like to see Bank of America and the other banks with these agreements to agree to renegotiate. For the Board of Education and other elected officials out there to support us in this. They should be out here supporting us, calling on these banks to renegotiate.
The AFL-CIO says that the 99% of the country who want jobs should take careful note of how each U.S. senator voted on President Obama's American Jobs Act. The Labor Federation says the unanimous Republican opposition to the jobs bill reflects shamelessly distorted priorities. The AFL-CIO says it's appalling that the GOP is blocking the American Jobs Act. Chrysler UAW workers are the last workers at the Detroit 3 voting on the tentative deal reached with the union. UAW President Bob King says the Chrysler deal brings 2,100 more U.S. auto jobs. The Detroit 3 deals combined, he says, will add more than 20,000 new direct jobs. It means billions of dollars in U.S. auto industry investments, but compensation increases for most of the auto workers came in the form of bonuses and profit sharing rather than in wage increases. Every year, the Center for Studying Health System Change hosts a conference in Washington, D.C. called Wall Street Comes to Washington. As Jesse Russell reports, this year, it was far from business as usual.
This year, they might as well have called it Occupy Wall Street Comes to Washington, as the conference was disrupted by protesters, saying that Wall Street has no place in healthcare. The panelists at the conference represented Citigroup, City Investment Research, Morgan Stanley, and Goldman Sachs. Dr. Margaret Flowers spoke out at the conference.
2 million people in this country a year can't get cancer treatment. They have to choose between cancer treatment and sending their children to college. You should be ashamed. Every single one of you should be ashamed for what you're part of. If you're in here, you're with Wall Street. You should be outside with us.
Outside of the conference, Adarla Scarlett told the story of her father, who took his own life because he didn't want his health care costs to be a burden on his children.
He says verbatim in his note, he says, I'm sure you understand that this was something I had to do. Getting old and ill without money is simply not an option in this country.
She said she traveled to D.C. from Colorado to be a voice for people like her father.
Every person that dies from lack of access to health care is somebody's father or son or daughter, and I'm here today to stand up not only for my father, but for all those like him.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Seems like things are kind of upside down. Joke with you, someone to turn around her.
Well, it looks like the Herman Cain train has, it looks like it's steamed into the top of the pack. According to UPI, the Herman Cain train is at the very tippy top, according to the NBC News Wall Street Journal poll released yesterday. Former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney is in second. Rick Perry has dropped from first place to third. Now, there's part of me that says don't get all upset. The black walnut, as he refers to himself, flavor of the month, in my opinion, just like when Donald Trump hit the top of the polling, just like when Michelle Bachmann raised herself up, they have fallen. And this is a long race. So you're going to see the Herman Cain train take a little dip, I think. And this whole 999 plan to me, I think people will wake up and realize what that is. Anyway, let's go to the phone lines. Got Andy on line one. How you doing tonight, Andy?
Fine, Rick. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
I'm in a cafe in San Francisco. It's pretty loud in here. But, yeah, I heard you guys talking about getting these people to vote. Hey, Jake, could you tell Jake, these aren't the voting type. These aren't the type that go door to door soliciting for Obama. These are the people that are on the streets, man, and it is kind of the last straw. I mean, people here are fired up and they want action. That's why they're doing what they're doing. I know, Rick, you've been out to Philadelphia and to New York. I'm sure you see that same thing. I mean, it's pushing people to the edge.
Right.
A lot of these kids have been lost their homes, or their parents have lost their homes, or they've lost their jobs. I mean, this is to the wall.
Yeah. What's going on out there in San Francisco? I mean, I understand as Jeb Bush is in town.
Yeah, they're trying to privatize. They're doing some privatization, school privatization seminars here for some of the mucky mucks at the higher ends of the education system, I guess, in town. They got Jeb Bush and Rupert Murdoch pushing these privatization schemes. You know, the charter school, the whole system. Okay, huh? Get in on it.
Well, they want to get in on the ground floor so they can make the biggest buck.
Yeah, I guess the goal is Rupert figures Fox should be able to get 10% of the domestic school privatization action, and he wants to be in on the ground floor with Jebby.
Wow. It's,
we gave Jeb and Rupert a nice little welcome here.
Good for you. Good for you. And that's what I'm hoping is going to happen here Friday night into Saturday morning, that we're going to see hundreds of people show up and take to the Capitol steps and have the conversation. And I think to a point you're right. I wish that we could get those folks to be voting types. Maybe not go out canvas and do other things, but at least get to the polls and push for candidates who are going to emulate the things that they're talking about.
Yeah. More the kids here on the ground seem to be the, ecological type, the environmental type. These are the people that'll stay up in a treehouse for months trying to save a few redwood trees or sequoias. That's the type of people we got down here.
Yeah, they're the ones that Fox mocks. They're the ones that the mainstream media make fun of.
Yeah, but they're Americans too. They have just as much right to this country and being treated fairly and decently as anybody else.
Yeah, and
they're the vanguard of this. I mean, these are the kids that are doing it up, holding the ground.
I didn't tell you, but
I was there 2 weeks ago when a phalanx of about 70 or 80 cops marched on them and took all their stuff. And I'll tell you, it scared me to watch those cops marching up the street with their batons and their headgear. And when you have nothing, and those kids held their ground. They waited till they got kicked off the grounds and away from their belongings. The police surrounded them, and the DPW, the Department of Public Works, just took everything away. You know what? Those kids didn't leave. They stayed there the whole night.
Good for them. Good for them. And I'm kind of interested to see what's going to happen tomorrow morning in New York, because Mayor Bloomberg has said that, they're going to clean the area up. They want to plant some fresh flowers, maybe a fresh coat of paint, some nice sprucing up of the park. And we both know what that is, or kicking them out of the park. But it'll be interesting to see how what transpires tomorrow morning.
Yeah, you're right. That's exactly what he's going to do. He's going to try to nip this in the bud before it goes any further.
What do you think of this? Since you've been on the ground, Andy, the frame has been that this is a leaderless movement. Do you think that's a good thing? And do you see any leaders emerging from your group?
Well, it's kind of tough because there is a contingent of more militant folks that I notice. I've been at general assemblies and watched them in action, and there is some militant folks versus the old line San Francisco flower children type that want to be more accommodating to the police, for instance. For instance, we had a nice march a week ago. We got about 1,000 to 1,500 people on a Wednesday afternoon. And the police wanted to know the route of the march beforehand so they could block off the traffic and make sure there were no problems. And the militant groups, the militant guys in the group, didn't want to give the police any information at all.
See, that's to me just dumb.
And the flower children people, the more mature people, said, hey, let's come on. Let's work with these guys. We can work with them. They're just here. They're just doing their job. But the overbearing, more militants won out. And what happened that night, the police rounded up all their belongings and took the camp away. So I think they might have learned their lesson from that. But when you are leaderless, you have just kind of, I don't want to say anarchy, but it takes an awful long time to make a decision.
Yep.
And it is so democratic, Athenian, that it does, you don't get quick decisions. Everything is talked about, and you might not get the best decisions because I think people might get overpowered. Then you have, majority rules, and unfortunately, majorities aren't always right. And sometimes you get intimidated, but then you get worn out in those sort of things. So, but overall, I think it's good. I'd rather not see demands and actual written grievances, although there are. But I just want to see them hold the ground. That's what I tell them. I think you guys are wonderful. I think you guys are great. Just hold the ground. Do not let this mountain, this hill go. You keep this hill. You do not leave. That is the number one priority of this group, to not leave. That's my message to them.
All right. Well,
I think a lot of them believe that.
Yeah, well, we'll see how this I'm excited about what's going to happen here in Harrisburg. We'll see what happens tomorrow night and how this goes forward. Keep up the great work out there, Andy, and give us a report on how things are progressing next week.
Yeah, I'll go back out there. I'm not far from their camp right now. I'll go back there tonight once I get off the computer and hang out for an hour or two before I go home.
Good. Andy, thanks so much, brother.
All right, take care of yourself.
Yeah. Bye-bye. And again, you know, you look at this and the reality being, hey, it is slow and it is painful and it is excruciating, but it's having the conversation. And that's what I think is needed. That's what I think is really important here.
Well, I think at some point we have to, maybe for the sake of a lot of citizens who aren't quite sure what it's about, maybe we need to sharpen our message a bit. I think that's a fair statement.
Yeah, and I think we're gonna go out Friday night. We're gonna do some recording and we'll play some of those interviews on Monday. Why folks are out there. Anyway, but back to the cane train. Evidently, people have taken to the nice marketing job he's done with the 999 plan. The very simplistic, 999. It sounds good. It sounds like something, you know, you'd see in a pizza ad. But then again, that's where his expertise is, in marketing pizza. So when you hear that, you know, it's pretty simple. Only problem is nobody seems to like it on any side of the equation. Nobody seems to think it can work, well, except for the extreme righties. Grover Norquist came out and said, when you hear 999, the only thing people really know is, I get it. Everybody pays the same rate. Everybody sees what they're doing. But what does that 999 turn into? Grover's not in favor of it. Said that he would vote against it. Kind of interesting thought there. And also, you know, you go through this, and when does it end? I mean, one of the guys, this Robertson Williams from the Urban Institute, he's a senior fellow there. He said, "Look, this is really going to harm the poor. At the end of it, you know, it's not, the 9% is going to save them half of the, of their personal income tax, and that's a nice savings for the very wealthy, because the very wealthy people making over $1 million a year pay about 18% federal income tax." So you drop that down to 9%, that's a wonderful savings. That's half. But the poor folks, the people who, you know, the bottom 50% who the right loves to say is paying nothing, you're talking about a massive tax increase, and you're talking about taking money out of people's pockets. And I know, Herman said, well, you know what we'll do is we'll get rid of that payroll tax. So you're going to starve Social Security and it will die? Well, yes, of course. That's the point, isn't it? Stop and think about that for a second. They're going to do away with the payroll tax, so you're not going to have to pay Social Security, Jake. Don't have to worry about that. They're going to have a 9% income tax. Where are they going to pay that money to?
Doesn't that feed into it at a certain level? The conservative star of the beast, a little bit.
No, that's starving it and gutting it and ripping its stomach out through the backside, because the reality is, and if you look at the numbers and the folks over at the Center for American Progress, and I've talked about this, I have pointed out, look, what he will do is cut revenue to the government in half. So you want to talk about massive deficits? You want to talk about massive debt down the road? Just go to the Hermie plan. And it's not a flat tax. Everyone keeps saying, well, it's a 9% flat tax, 9% sales tax, 9% income tax, 9% corporate tax rate. So you think, hey, it's flat right there. It's all one rate. No problem. Except there are tons of exemptions right from the start. Empowerment zones and all kind of stuff. Oh, you won't have to pay tax on used goods. So is everything going to be used in the future? It's nuts. But, you know, it's a nice talking point. It's a nice marketing ploy. And he understands that. He understands basic advertising. And you got to give him credit for that.
Well, you also have to give him credit. I heard him, well, just this week, he was confronted in an interview. And the man said, you know, I had people who I trust who ran your numbers through. And he said, it's just not going to work. But, you know, Herman was adamant. Well, that's not actually true, and it will work, and this is why. Blah, blah. You have to give him credit. He sticks to the format. He just will not back off.
Well, he's a conservative. Look, you know, you can't waste a good frame. When you've come up with a nice sales gimmick, don't ruin it. Keep going with it. The big lie theory. Keep it on. Because there are some dimwits out there who will not refuse to think about it. It just sounds good. You know what? I'm going to have to pay. I'm going to get that money back. I'm going to get a whole pile of cash. I'm not thinking that, you know, the 9% sales tax. Well, that's only a 3% increase over what we're paying now. No. That's in addition to your state sales tax.
Well, no. You know, facts can be inconvenient things.
Now, for me, who, you know, people like me, who spend almost every penny that we earn raising our family and paying for our living expenses, and, you know, maybe a night out every now and again, you are taxed on absolutely every penny that you earn twice. When you earned it, 9%, and when you spent it, another 9%, plus here in the state of Pennsylvania, I think it's 7% sales tax, 6 or 7, right? So you're talking about 15%, 16% sales tax. You want to talk about something that's going to destroy the economy? Oh, just nuts. Anyway, let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
5 men suddenly found themselves faced with an all-out attack on their territory. 5 men confronted by a hostile power. But these 5 men looked destiny in the eye, and then they suited up and took care of business. This sounds like a heroic action movie, but these guys are hardly heroes. They're the top executives of the giant paper maker, Temple Inland, and the power confronting them was International Paper, and even Gianter Corporation. International was making a hostile bid to take over Temple Inland, swallow the competitor whole, and spit out the 5 executives. Sensing this, our heroes did indeed take care of business, their own. And when I said they suited up, it was not in battle gear, but in golden parachutes. Shareholders were recently sent a cryptic message from the corporation urging them to approve, quote, the compensation that may be paid to Temple Inland's named executive officers. Those would be our 5 self-serving stalwarts who negotiated the takeover deal, including CEO Doyle Simons. How much compensation? Simons is to get $8.8 million in cash, $29 million in stock payments, a $6 million pension, and $16 million in tax reimbursement. Yes, not only is Doyle getting a golden parachute, but the company is also paying the taxes he'll owe on the gold he takes with him. The top 5 leaders are bailing out of Temple Inland with a total of $162 million to cushion their fall from the corporate pinnacle. Not so fortunate are some 10,000 of the corporation's common workers who were abandoned to the merciless god of mergers, which always requires sacrifices of jobs in these situations. This is Jim Hightower saying, bosses get the gold, workers get the shaft, and International Paper gets market control. Where's Teddy Roosevelt when we need him to bust these merger merchants?
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out. HightowerLowdown.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. I got an email during the break that, again, you look at what's going on with these occupations, and they are open to absolutely everyone. Look, they'll accept me coming. They'll accept you, and I hope a lot of people show up tomorrow night at midnight. I hope a lot of folks listen to the program, and at the end, head over and participate in what's going to go on the steps there. But here's the thing. Now, as we've seen around, you know, different places around the country, you've got your agent provocateurs, you've got your little plants, you've got your little snipes, they're gonna go in for their own little personal political, statement, like the woman who videotaped, the one labor guy at the last meeting, saying, you know, nothing wrong in my opinion, saying, look, if you're gonna, And I will defend him. He said, look, at the end of the day, if you're going to go into the streets, you got to be ready to be arrested. And if you do get arrested, you got to come back out here. This is about staying the course. This is things that people like me, like you, Jake, people who have been on picket lines, who have done rallies, who have done protests, understand that it's about, you know, you're not going to be violent. The last thing you can possibly be is violent. But you know what? Sometimes they may round up a bunch of people and take you in. That's to break your spirit. You got to come back out. So with that in mind, you've got these right-wing groups who send out these people who are going to cause trouble. And I tell you, if you're standing out there and you got some idiot next to you doing something stupid, call him on it. Say, hey, you know, enough of that. So I've seen this video, and I'm sure a lot of people have seen it. This kid who claims that he's a protester and that he lives there, and he claimed to be part of the plumbers union. And I looked at him, I said, he looks kind of wimpy to be a plumber, but you know, hey, whatever, you know. But he's going off on this anti-Semitic rant at this Jewish guy because he's wearing the yarmulke, and he's just, you know, just berating the guy. Turns out, again, you know, it got so much play in the mainstream media. It got so much play on the internet. Turns out the guy who did this was a plant. His name is Danny Lotion Man Klein, and he's actually Jewish. So he is staging this anti-Semitic rant against another Jewish person. Now, he's been videotaped numerous times. He was harassing the demonstrators, and then he pretended to be one of them. He was actually picking fights with homeless people. I mean, you're upstanding citizen. A good upstanding citizen. All so that you can say that, well, that whole movement's anti-Semitic, which that played for about a day. So I'm saying, you know, if you see this stuff, be prepared. And ostracize that person. It's interesting. I like what one of the demonstrators did in Lower Manhattan. Someone had a sign that said, Google, Zionists control Wall Street. And the guy stood right next to him with a sign with an arrow pointing towards the guy with the Zionist control Wall Street sign that said a-hole. I think that's a good way to do it. Yeah, here, and have a bunch of people stand around with signs pointing at him. I like that. I kind of do. I think I'm going to get my own a-hole sign. Come on, that's a good one.
Well, you're allowed.
And, well, it is. It's part of this whole thing. And thanks, Jim, for the email and pointing this out, because, you know, I looked at it and I go, you know, I watched the video and I just shook my head and I'm going, you know, that's absolutely the wrong way to go in this. It's absolutely the wrong thing. And as the kid, as Lotion Man, I don't know how you get Lotion Man, my mind is now working. Maybe his last name is actually Bates. And I'm sure if he was a master, well, you can go from yourself there. That's the only Lotion Man thing I can come up with. But I saw this kid and I'm going, man, that's just plain wrong. And he kept throwing all this stuff out there and I'm going, nah, this guy's screwy. And here we find out the truth. So I'm telling you, scary, scary stuff. And they're going to be. You know, where we are in central Pennsylvania, you're going to have T-Twits are going to show up. They're going to want to cause trouble. You're going to have these Freedom Works people going to show up. They're going to want to cause trouble. You're going to have people who are there for no other reason than riling people up, getting them all lathered up, and making them do and trying to get them to do something stupid. And, you know, look, I think the people understand that. I think the video with our friend Mike, I think people, you know, kind of get taken back by that. Maybe. And they're prepared. I'm hoping that's the case. Don't know if you saw this, but, you know, ever since that Troy Davis was killed by the state of Georgia, with a whole lot of very bizarre circumstance. To me, if I were the governor, I don't think I would have gone forward with it. I would have said, nah, there are too many things that I feel a little weird about. The fact that, what, 7 of the 9 people who testified against the guy recanted or changed their stories. You never found a gun. You never found any real hard evidence. It was basically eyewitness testimony. And 7 of the 9 people kind of changed the story. So I think that I would have had a little hard time with. And look, I'm not a death penalty person at all anyway. But it looks like public support for the death penalty is falling. It has fallen to its lowest point since 1972, according to a Gallup poll. That Gallup is saying that 61% of people approve of using the death penalty for people who commit murder. That's down from 64% last year. And the high during the 80s, when we were really bloodthirsty, was in the 80s. And you go, well, maybe we've woken up a little bit. I don't know. But here in Florida, down there in Florida, they want to bring Sparky back. We want to bring back the electric chair and firing squads. And you know, maybe we'll make it like George Carlin wanted to do, a sport at halftime of Monday Night Football. You could have your Monday night executions. And you could do it, you know, in really creative ways, like have a catapult, throw him into a big giant fan. You know, just, you know, make it interesting, I guess, or have him slam into a wall or something.
No, why don't we go, you know, roam like, you know, bring in a few wild animals, you know, maybe a few lions and tigers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And how about this one?
Let's get Christian on them.
How about a big nasty bear? There you go.
Personally, I think we should take the Herman Cain approach. Come up with some jazzy catchphrase, some catchy little slogan. Make it fun. You know, execution sounds so official and so angry.
You know, we joke about it, but if you look at Texas and the Texas governor and some of the people he signed off on death warrants, I mean, it makes you cringe. Some of those people were mentally deficient. A couple cases where it was very questionable. There was racism involved. Wow. I mean, some real concerns about a lot of people. And he had no concern. He was proud of it. He was proud of the fact that he signed that death warrant. I mean, when you're flipping about killing people, it doesn't matter what they're accused of under our system, you're supposed to be absolutely certain that these people are guilty.
But even still, look, I mean, I guess it's all those years I spent being beaten in Catholic school. I guess it's all of that browbeating and that book learning.
You mean some of it rubbed off, Rick?
No, it didn't rub off. It was beaten.
Beaten into you?
Literally beaten.
And, of course, the nuns that beat you were always wrong.
Well, they were evil. Sexually repressed.
Okay.
Angry.
So they saw this big kid that was just an angel. They just had the urge to beat you, right?
Well, it wasn't just me. It was all boys. They hated the boys. Hated us.
Well, I remember growing up with kids who were Catholic, and they used to talk about the nuns that liked to use the rulers on their head and their hands all the time.
Back of the neck and across the knuckles, man. If it wasn't the pointer with the little black tip, it was that yardstick. And I, you know, look, if you ever want to see my nun, and I had her a couple of times, I'll go to the Blues Brothers movie and look at the Penguin. When she comes out with that stick, man, it's like, that's her. She looked like a Jedi Knight. But, you know, I still remember that whole thing. And look, it was beaten into me. Those 10 little things that people want plastered all over that nobody seems to want to live by. I mean, if we truly were a Christian nation and we had those 10 things plastered everywhere, would we have the problems we have today? Sure we would. I mean, you should know those 10 little things. And my problem with the death penalty is, you know what? I don't think you should kill. And you know, thou shalt not kill. I think that's pretty simple. I mean, what part of thou shalt not don't we get? And now you can turn that around on the abortion issue as well. And look, personally, I'm anti-abortion for me personally. But I don't think I have the right to tell others what to do. But I would prefer to have a situation where, you know what? We help people protect themselves. And you know what? Maybe have the plan B, have that happen. I had an interesting conversation with a relative who, big, big Catholic. In fact, you know, friends of mine call him a Pope sucker. Real big, you know, donates.
Big contributor.
Huge money to the church. Trying to buy his way in. That kind of money. You know, not just little bits. Huge money trying to buy his way into the big house. because, you know, you live
he
for...
He must feel guilty.
He lived for 75 years or whatever, and he's got some things he's got to atone for. So, big contributions. He had an interesting, and I didn't get the memo, because I guess I've been Catholic for a while, so I didn't get the memo that said that, you know, if women have 72 hours to go and do whatever it is they want to do. And I don't remember the church saying that. I don't remember the memo that, you know, in those first 72 hours, anything's game. So I'm going to have to try and get an official edict on that from the hierarchy of the church. Maybe they'll send me the memo. But he was in favor of boy, and I go, wow, this is interesting. He wanted to sterilize people. He wanted to do what he called a parentectomy, that we go in and we snatch kids away. And wow, I can't wait for the Christians to take over. Such wonder. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. Right back.
To the Rick Smith Show.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make this thing happen!
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Well, the big press conference today, President Obama and the President of South Korea on this trade thing and some other stuff. But here to talk to us about it and other stuff is our good friend Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you very much.
So the big press conference today, get the trade thing out of the way. We're not happy with it. We can move on.
yeah, well, he certainly supported his trade agreement, the president saying it would bring $11 billion to the U.S., but he didn't say what was going to go out.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing that gets me is, and I remember the president saying, you know, they wanted it all in one package. That those trade deals were part of the overall package. Am I wrong on this?
The trade deals were part of the overall package. That's absolutely right.
So the idea, I'm thinking, you've got to take the good, bad, and the ugly. And the ugly were those trade agreements. The good stuff was the building and infrastructure. When did we decide to piecemeal this off?
You mean the overall deal with when the Republicans refused to vote for the entire package and two Democrats.
Well, again, another Democratic caving, saying, okay, well, we'll do the jobs thing. They filibustered the jobs thing. The Republicans filibustered that, and then they went right to the, okay, let's pass the free trade agreement.
Right, exactly. Well, the president, after 5 years, the president says that he is going to hope that they pass. He was very eloquent today. He said, listen, we're going to go for infrastructure. When have the Republicans ever been against repairing our infrastructure, particularly if it adds jobs? Then he said after that, we're going to go for putting more teachers in. He said, basically, let them explain if they're going to vote down the teachers how they're going to do it.
Well, when were they against it? The second a black guy took the White House. I shouldn't put it that way. The second the opposition took the White House.
Right.
Is the better way of putting it.
That's right. That's right. There is certainly the issue and the question that many people ask. Is it that he's a Democrat? Is it that he's an African-American Democrat? What is the issue?
Well, it's all of the above. And the thing is, you know, you look at all these people who are in the streets, and thank goodness that they're there, and I'm hoping millions more across the country join them. It is about jobs, and I look at this jobs bill that the Republicans rolled out today. Is there anything new in this? Is there ever a new idea that pops into their head?
Well, not only is it not any new ideas, but the question is, are there any ideas that are going to work? That's always the question.
There you go, because every one of these things in the past they have tried, and look what it got us into.
Right, bigger mess.
I mean, this is just doubling down on bad. Use their rhetoric against them. Oh, we're doubling down on bad policy. You're right. In fact, you're tripling down on it. It got us into a mess twice. Now we're going for three. just insanity there, what's going on. And I'm hoping that the Tea Party people, and I'm hoping that rational Republicans scream, holler, carry on, because I don't know many Tea Party people who are in favor of these trade agreements.
Well, you know what's interesting? I saw an article in the Wall Street Journal, I may have told you about it, about the Tea Party going after GE and what they're doing, bringing jobs to China. And I read the article and I thought, well, wait a minute. It says Tea Party, but it could easily have said unions or the left, because it was the same very issue.
And this is where I think people have the opportunity, and I'm always looking for ways to reach across and join with other people I disagree with. There's an opportunity here, an opportunity for this country to kind of heal itself, to come together and say, you know what, we may not agree on some of those fringe social issues, we may not agree on, you know, who sleeps with who, but we should agree on where we build stuff, we should agree on having good, solid-paying jobs, oh, I don't know, here.
And we should agree on the fact that we're just not going to let everybody take our manufacturing base.
Which is what's going on. And you look at this currency manipulation bill that passed through, and good for them. And it's got enough co-sponsors and sponsors in the House. Question is will the Republicans let it out of committee?
My guess is no.
And here again, another way to look at our government and say, see, it's broken. So the president also talked about the Iranian thing. What's going on there?
Well, yes, the president basically said, look, he was questioned, you know, do other countries there are saying, well, this really wasn't a plot, it didn't go to the highest levels, et cetera. He said, listen, I think there was an indictment here. Yes, we knew about it. But when people see the facts, they will speak for themselves, and basically they're irrefutable. So we'll see. We'll see when it comes up in trial.
Well, and that's and where are we going to be trying these people?
That's a very good question. Definitely not Guantanamo. I think they're going to be tried in the United States.
And where they should be.
Exactly.
But then the question becomes, and I know the T-Twizzler, my friends of mine, you know, well, are you going to give them rights? Are they going to have rights like me?
They were caught in Texas, not on the battlefield.
Well, that's there you go. There's the argument then. Ellen Ratner, always great talking to you. Thanks for the info from D.C.
Thank you.
Alrighty, now to find out what's going on across the street. What do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Thanks, Rick. We talked about what's happening up in New York with that protest. And insiders are very much expecting just what you said, Rick. They're being ordered by 6 a.m. tomorrow to vacate. The city says they want to clean up. They have every expectation, and when they come back, there'll be new rules, basically rules that prohibit sleeping bags, tents, tarps, and even simple things like lying down on the ground. In other words, they basically want to throw them out, as you said, in Philadelphia. Back down there, it's coming on the second week of their protest. The city has already told them that, look, by next month, we have a long planned construction project. You're going to have to get out. So it looks like the power structure is getting a little antsy in the laying down the law, so to speak.
Well, I like what they did in Denver. The one state senator said he worries that the smelly hippies are going to attack the police. You know, violent, smelly hippies. What a bunch of nitpicks.
Well, I wanted to take a few minutes, just the next couple minutes that I'm given, to kind of get into what happened in 2010 and how the implications into 2012 and the excesses. 2010 is when the conservatives in this country really shone. The Republicans came off a make no mistake about it, they came off a drubbing in 2008. They were itching for a fight. They wanted to get back in the win column. They were energized. They had the money. they had the numbers, and in fact, they did get their base out much better than the Democrats did. And for whatever reason, to their everlasting regret, a lot of Americans stayed away from the polls in 2010. And then you have the problem that the Democrats had with to use a football metaphor, those from the 35-yard line, those in the middle, the moderates who in most elections decide elections, they went Republican. And then, as we've talked several times, the Citizens United case, and although we've talked about it, I'm not sure the American public really understands how completely that has changed the political landscape. You take someone like Karl Rove. Karl Rove, for a long time, was a chief advisor to the Bush family. George Bush's, obviously, his second term came to an end in 2008. And in a relatively short time, for 2010, he raised about $40 million. Now, that's a lot of money, but he has already publicly said, because of the new rules under Citizens United, he expects to raise an astonishing $420 million. And then you have, as we talked about earlier in the show, you talked about the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and that's, to call them U.S. is really stretching the term U.S. They set up satellite chambers of commerce all over the world, literally in Russia and India and Bahrain, and in each of these countries, the corporate interests, the multinationals funneled huge amounts of money. Now, the other part of Citizens United is that we as citizens don't have a right to know where this money comes from or how much. So here we have multinationals from other countries sending in huge amounts of money to do what? Into the U.S. elections that decide who will represent the American people in the halls of government. Now you think about that. One of the things that really sticks out in my mind as a result, and the conservatives took over, we talked about it ad nauseum, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin. The one thing that I always remember is what they did in Michigan, and this to me strikes at the very heart of democracy. They set up something called financial czar. And they allowed these financial czars to go into any subdivision in the entire state. That could be a city. That could be a township, it could be a borough, it could even be a school board. And they have the power to come in and take over under very, very thin guidelines. They have done that. They have come in, they have actually taken over cities, they have taken over school boards, and when they do that, they have the power to supersede the power that was given to the school board, the power to supersede what was given to a city council or a borough council, the power to supersede the power that was invested by voters into mayors. Now, you think about that. You think about that. To me, that borders on totalitarian thought, but that's exactly what has happened. There was a city in Michigan earlier this year that was taken over. These are the kind of things that we can expect on a national level if the Republicans take over. What has to happen? The Democrats, or at least some straight-thinking Republicans, and right now I don't see a lot of them, what we need to do legislatively, Rick, and you and I have talked about this, but it's so true. The Congress of the United States needs to address these dreadful consequences, and it could be tragic consequences if we let it go on for too long. The aftermath of Citizens United, and that's why it's so, so important for Obama and the Democrats to take over. Now, whether they can or not is another story, but legislatively, we're gonna have to change the present system because, yes, you can say, Jake, well, money has always been a big part, absolutely. But now it's getting to the point where it's actually overwhelming our democracy, and I truly believe that our democracy is in grave danger if we don't change it and change it quickly. Back to you, Rick.
All righty. Well, let's take a quick break. Right back after this. I got a picture in my pocket of the lucky ones. I'll announce the winner on the radio. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat. It is my business hat. I'm on till 1 a.m. I must tell you that. I'm a man with a mission. The Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better.
On June 25th, 1938, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the Fair Labor Standards Act into law. Viewed as one of the final pieces of legislation of FDR's New Deal and the single most worker-friendly piece of legislation ever written, the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938 was a victory not only for labor unions, but for workers, families, and children across the country. FDR called the new law the most far-reaching, far-sighted program for the benefit of workers ever adopted in this or any other country. This visionary piece of legislation put a ceiling over hours and a floor under wages, mandating a 44-hour work week, a 25-cent minimum wage, and time and a half for overtime. The Fair Labor Standards Act was later amended to 40 hours per week and 40 cents per hour. The law also excluded children from working dangerous jobs and set standard conditions for the employment of child workers to avoid continued exploitation of children. The Fair Labor Standards Act has been changed or amended at least 43 different times. These alterations have been used both to expand worker protections, such as raising the minimum wage, prohibiting age discrimination, and requiring equal pay, and to restrict and take away protections such as the Taft-Hartley Act and the 2004 Fair Pay Amendment. Today, we take the 40-hour work week, minimum wages, overtime, and child labor protections for granted. But up until the passage of the Fair Labor Standards Act, workers were at the mercy of their employers, and children were dying in industrial accidents. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. If you missed any portion of the program, go to the website, download the podcast. Also, if you've got a smartphone, you can get the Stitcher app. I want to thank our guest, David Madlin, director of the American Worker Project at the Center for American Progress. Stephen Capozzola, media director at the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Of course, Greg Palast, just an amazing author. And I'm looking forward to Vulture's Picnic coming out. And, of course, Christy Setzer from the U.S. Chamber Watch. I mean, you look at what's going on today and for the last couple of weeks, and it's just, well, this jobs bill. I can't get the real American jobs bill out of my head. The same junk that got us into the mess we're in, as Politico calls it, a conservative dream agenda. You know, I would call it the big happy wet dream that they're getting, big sloppy wet kiss. And you know what's amazing to me is the Republicans with a straight face can say this is how we would govern if we were in charge. Yes, this is how you govern poorly. This is what got us into this mess. More deregulation, more of the same, more tax cuts for the wealthy. That's what got us into this mess. That's what put us in a position where we cannot rebuild our infrastructure. And what's amazing to me is we still seem to keep buying into the nonsense. And Robert Reich had a nice little speech the other day where he ran through a couple of ideas that these myths that the GOP keep throwing out, like this idea that if we cut taxes for the ultra wealthy, it will trickle down on us and we will all benefit. Well, we have seen that it does not work. You know, George H.W. Bush was right. It's voodoo economics. It does not work. They go on, they say, well, you know, if we have high taxes on the rich, it's gonna hurt the economy, it's gonna slow growth. Nonsense. You go back through most of the 20th century, we had rates above 70%. And in fact, during the Eisenhower years, you were up to 91%. And I love this idea, and this is another one, and Reich is right on this, and we've talked about it a number of times, this idea that somehow if we shrink government, we're going to create all these jobs. If we cut spending, we cut, we're going to somehow magically create jobs. So policemen and firemen and teachers and social workers and all those, once we get rid of all of those, somehow jobs will spring up. That's the right-wing view. I don't know anybody who can... who can, in a sane, rational way, articulate that to be true, but it's a nice talking point, is it? We're saving money by cutting jobs. We're saving money by kicking policemen to the curb. And I'm sure the folks tomorrow morning in New York would be very happy to see some of those cops standing on the unemployment line. And I'm really hoping for the best there tomorrow. Because, you know, look, you know, the cops, they got this, they're in the same boat with us. They're part of the 99%. You know, I love that city councilman in Covington, Kentucky, who thinks he's part of the 1%. It's just nuts. Reich also went into cutting the budget deficits now is more important than boosting the economy. That's the other right-wing talking point. And the reality is that's not remotely even close to the truth. You know, everybody should be for cutting deficits and cutting debt when it's time. You don't decide to wax your boat when you're out in the middle of the ocean with a hole in it. You don't decide to change the oil in your car doing 100 miles an hour down the road off the side of a cliff. And we are really in trouble. So cutting spending now is the worst possible thing that can happen. And if and when we do double dip recess, it will be because the Republicans have done this. And this other idea that the Republicans keep throwing out, that Medicare and Medicaid are somehow, well, they're the ones that are driving the budget deficits. They're the ones who are putting us in deep debt. You know what? You know, if we had the ability to bargain for drug prices, that might be helpful. Maybe if we got the hell out of two wars, that might be helpful. Maybe if we went back and took some of those tax handouts that we gave during the Bush years, maybe that would be helpful. Just a thought. I mean, at some point, and these are all things I think that the folks, you know, hopefully going to be here in Harrisburg and across the country are grappling with. I mean, explain to me again, because I'm struggling with this, why it is that Warren Buffett is going to pay a lower tax rate than I pay. Why is that? Sure, he pays the $15,000, the $15,300 in payroll tax, but you know what? I pay about half that, but it's on every single penny that I earn. You know, if you're going to talk about fairness, let's talk about having a tax rate that affects every penny that we earn. Because as I've said, I truly believe we could lower the payroll tax, which would be a major stimulus to the economy, if you just took the cap off. We could solve our problems with Social Security and Medicare very, very simply. But for some odd reason, we just don't have the political will. And, you know, maybe we should start looking where the real fraud is. Instead of worrying about the welfare mother who's trying to feed her kids, or instead of worrying about, the guy who's unemployed, why not worry about who's really robbing us blind? And I've come up with this website. I've come across, a listener sent it to me, that looks at the False Claims Act. And it goes through and it says, you know, these are the big settlements that the government's going after that we never hear about. Like home health provider LHC Group. They agreed to pay $65 million to settle a false claims case there. Because what they were doing? Whenever someone would come in for a treatment or an appointment or whatever under Medicare, well, they would upcode it. It would be the next code. Well, yeah, we did that, but it was also this too. And they were billing for things that were medically unnecessary. Why? Pad their pockets. And you know what the Republicans will hear? And they're really trying to understand. Get ready for this. This whole whistleblower thing is going to come to a head very soon. The Republicans want to do away with paying whistleblowers. Because they know if you can take the incentive out of people blowing the whistle, maybe they'll stop. This LHC group paid $65 million. The woman who blew the whistle, she got $12 million. I think that's a pretty good incentive. Also, this Select Specialty Hospital of Columbus, they agreed to pay $7.5 million to settle a False Claims Act lawsuit. Why? The hospital was taking kickbacks from different area physicians under the guise of a sham medical director payment. So they set up this whole thing that, we'll pay you a little bit. You kick us some money back. Hey, it's just government. It's just government money. And I know what the Republicans are going to say. Well, if this was a private corporation, they wouldn't get away with this. They didn't. They got caught. And that's the thing that gets me. We don't hear enough about these people getting caught. In fact, there's this Larry Duren. And they're claiming, well, not claiming, they convicted him. They convicted him of one of the largest Medicare frauds in the history of this country. He submitted more than $205 million in phony claims. And you know what he got? 50 years in prison, and good for him. I hope they put him in the worst prison. Not one of those nice, soft, blue-collar prisons. And good news on Wall Street. The hedge fund billionaire, Raj, whatever his last name is, you spell it, Raj Ratnamman, or whatever, he's got $11 million in jail, 11 years in prison and a $10 million fine. Now, he made over $50 million in profits from his illegal trades, so the $10 million fine probably not going to hurt a guy who's a billionaire. But he's going to do 11 years in prison, and that's good for him. That's what I like to hear. We should be seeing more of this. There should be more of these criminals doing the perp walk, in my opinion, in my humble opinion. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. That $50 million, not $50 million, but $205 million is a staggering amount. I remember that story when it broke. But I was almost floored by the 50 years, but I guarantee you, maybe the next time some people in his position are thinking about cheating, maybe they ought to look at spending the rest of their life behind bars. And I say great for the government.
And what's amazing to me, and again, he got $205 million in phony claims from the government, and they eventually caught him, but he got that money. And what did he do with it? He set up the National Association for Behavioral Health, the NABH, mm-hmm. and they spent $750,000 lobbying, cross-party lines, Democrats, Republicans, all of them. They spent a lot of money, flying people into Capitol Hill. They did the whole smooze and the handshakes and all of that with our money. And you know what? Eventually he got caught. So when I hear people say, well, a private company wouldn't do that, sure they would. You just wouldn't hear about it. Again, tomorrow night, bring a blanket, bring a sleeping bag, bring something. Meet us at the Capitol steps. 12:01 Saturday morning. I think it will be an excellent, a learning experience. I'm going to bring my kids on Saturday to spend a little time at the occupation, to be part of it. Bring your kids down. Come on down. We look forward to seeing you. That's the end music. We'll see you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickssmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide and flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Good memories are forever, save the dog on the tombstone. If you live in Arden, eat the rich man, all roads lead to home.